You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning at 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this.
Good morning. You're very welcome along to Wednesday morning's OTB AM. It's Owen and Johnny here with you right the way through until around 9:15 this morning. Kieran Donaghy's shot clock is coming up very shortly, but really, there's only one place to start, and it is with a preposterous night in Paris last night. The Ole Gunnar Solskjaer bandwagon keeps on rolling. Johnny Ward, a very good morning to you.
How are you, Owen?
Last time you were in with me after a pretty crazy football match, you didn't manage to sleep. Did you manage to get any shut-eye last night? Because that was insane.
What was the last one?
Yeah, I think it was Manchester United or Manchester City against Liverpool after Christmas. And both of us are coming completely
sleep. Oh, yeah. So I have to be honest, I was on two Cheltenham preview nights last night. So
right.
Basically, the second one I was on was out in the Ballymun GA Club. So we were it was on the Autobahn. So everyone was, like, you know, observing what we were saying and all that. But all of a sudden, there was a big roar. So there was obviously a TV somewhere. And it turned out that the VAR had given the penalty at that stage. So then everyone just basically completely ignored the panel. The panel itself got up off the table and just watched the TV to see if they'd score the penalty. Because I hadn't even been monitoring the score. I'd given up on this game, as I think most people had. And
before kickoff?
Yeah, like I mean, I suppose when you're in preview night mode, you kind of forget about things. But I remember a guy was saying to me before the game that PSG were a good bet to win in 90 minutes. And I was just saying, well, they probably are, but like at the same time, 1-1 is fine and blah, blah, blah. They'll be grand. Like, but I never expected them to go out. I mean, the odds you'd have gotten on Ajax and PSG going through in a double must be absolutely astronomical.
Astronomical is right. I don't know. I definitely had a feeling something special might have happened last night. I think every time a Solskjaer team takes to the pitch now, it's kind of like the last scene in any US TV drama where you're like, right, this is the cliffhanger. Something big is going to happen here. Like, I had that feeling in my gut before last night as well. Like, obviously, when you think with your head and you look at the team sheet that they put out, you were like, this thing just isn't going to happen. This is ridiculous. There's no chance it does. And even the way the game develops, you're like, there's no way this thing can keep on happening because Paris Saint-Germain are clearly the superior team here. But yet, Manchester United managed to pull it out of the bag. We would love to hear your thoughts, by the way, this morning. You can tweet us at Off the Ball, and we'd love to get your reaction. But there are a couple of reactions from last night which were just as incredible as the game itself. I will start with Jesse Lingard on Instagram last night. Here is his reaction. Mind your ears. And then let's move on to Anthony Martial, a little more refined but still fairly crazy. He's watching the game at home. Here's Marcus Rashford stepping up to take the penalty. But probably just after saying in my ear, why aren't they there? It's a good point. Why haven't they flown over to Paris to actually watch the game?
It's funny, a lot of speaking to the odd fresh footballer, and a lot of clubs, they don't, like, if you're not playing, they don't want you on the boat, on the plane. Like, there's no point.
If it was a home game, they probably would have been there.
Yeah, but it's like, well, what's the point bringing you over there? You're not, you know, basically we don't need you over there, so you can just stay at home. And it's basically a fairly common thing, so not sure about his shirt there. It's kind of got a very strange kind of African kind of type vibe to it or something.
But if we're talking fashion, the fashion king of the night was of course Neymar, who looked like some sort of futuristic version of Justin Timberlake. Here's his reaction to what happened last night when the penalty is given. You can pinpoint the moment his heart breaks there. The sort of look around. Does Never Neymar know the camera's on him here?
Well, this is a thing, yeah, but modern
he
life.
He definitely does.
I'd say he does. I'd say he's definitely suspecting it anyway, like, and he's like, God, I better put on some sort of a, you know, horrified look here.
Yeah, exactly. He knows.
He's every right to be horrified, though.
Yeah, he would have got away for it if it wasn't for those pesky Manchester United kids. There are a couple of photos as well from last night. This one is the one that's doing the rounds. Three Manchester United legends pictured together in Paris. There's Cantona, Ferguson and Solskjaer. Even if you're not a Manchester United fan, it's impossible to not get extremely warm and fuzzy towards this and towards this entire thing that's going on. Not the feeling that the French media had this morning or last night, funnily enough. Let's just bring up L'Equipe's player ratings. because they're fairly ruthless, as you can imagine. They're often ruthless. Buffon getting a 2. Carer, as you can imagine, he gave away the ball for the opener, gets a 2. Dani Alves, Draxler, Mbappe, Di Maria, Kimpembe all get a 3. 5's really generously handed out to Thiago Silva, Verratti and Bernat, with Tuchel getting a 3. Manchester United then, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gets a 9. Pereira only gets a 3. Biden play enough. He gets non note. He doesn't get any rating. But Romelu Lukaku, according to L'Equipe, man of the match with an 8 out of 10 rating, which is one of the incredible storylines. We will get Andy Mitten's take a little bit later on. But just one more image, and this is going to be one of the talking points of the morning, I'd imagine, and it is the VAR controversy. Neymar taking to Instagram afterwards, not happy whatsoever with the VAR call. He says, this is a disgrace. They put 4 people that know nothing about football in charge of looking at the replay for VAR. There is no penalty. How can it be a handball when it hits his back? Go F yourself, he said on Instagram last night. And we don't want to linger on this too much, because it is a huge debate this morning in term, and we're going to go around in circles, but I think we're on opposite sides of the fence here, Johnny. You think it was no penalty whatsoever.
Neymar's wrong there, because it didn't hit his back. It hit his arm, but... Like, it really wrecks my head, the handball situation. How people think, like, that you can make decisions based on slow motion replays and stuff like that. And in the sense of, if you remember when Dublin were playing Roscommon on Sunday, Dublin's first goal, there was an umpire right behind the goal, and the ball was, I forget who got the first goal now for Dublin.
It's Conor Callaghan.
Conor Callaghan kind of goes top corner. And it's kind of going straight into the top corner, and the umpire is kind of behind it, and the umpire goes like this just to get out of the way, even though clearly the net's going to protect the ball. He's not going to get hit by the ball, but that's a natural thing to do because something's coming right at you. It was probably like the first time years ago people watched TV and something was coming right at the screen, and they were like, oh, this is going to hit me, even though obviously because they weren't used to watching stuff on TV. So the natural thing to do for the umpire was to get out of the way on Sunday. You could argue that the natural thing for the defender here is not to really turn his back, but like at the same time he's trying to, it kind of is a self-protection mode that he's doing. And when he's turning around, like, are you going to play soccer with your hands chained to you like that? It's not, you don't do that. And it's happening so fast. He's not instinctively thinking, if I put my hands out like this, I have a better chance of blocking the ball here. Because if he does that, he knows in the modern game, there's a chance it's going to be a handball, because this is interpreted wrongly so often. Basically, the rule is that if it's deliberate, it's a handball. If your hands are in an unnatural position, which is kind of like a vague sub-rule, it's also a handball. For me, there is no way he's trying to deliberately handle the ball there. And I just wanted to bring up what my friend Julian, who was a former referee, and he basically ended up, he probably would have been a referee in the League of Ireland, but he couldn't, he joined Paddy Power, so he obviously had to get out of refereeing, but he was a very good referee. And he says, he's careless, but I think it was very harsh. His arm isn't in a natural position. When you see someone lining up a shot, there is some self-preservation that comes into play. A decision like that would have been given maybe 2% of the time pre-VAR. With VAR, there is more pressure on referees when they're called to look at an incident like that to give the decision. Also, VAR replays should be shown in real time. This is the important thing. You know, this happened so fast. I'd love to know the actual time it took between the shot and the ball hitting the hand. We're talking like a split second here. And is he supposed to somehow, you know, manage and to get his hands into a position where, like, he's trying to block the ball with his body. But if you're trying to block the ball with your body, you're thinking about blocking the ball with your body, not keeping your hands chained to your...
But he did have enough time to jump, turn his back. So if he's got enough time to do that, then you have to allow to say that he had enough time to, you know, you can't just say that the ball travelled at him so quickly that his arms were in a position that he's in no control of them whatsoever, because he was in enough control to turn his body away.
Okay, but why are his hands out like that, can I ask me? What was his thought process in putting his hand where it is?
Well, as you say, it is just a natural human reaction. Now, that's what if you were to be totally cynical, then you could say, well, the natural human reaction is what people would forgive him for, and therefore he puts his arms into a position where he gives himself the best chance of blocking the ball. Now, the thing is, I'd actually like to know if the reaction would be more in favour of the referee had it actually hit his left hand, the hand that's actually blocking his face like that, because that's in a more unnatural position. But really, you're getting into a scale of what is more unnatural here, and really, both of his arms are in a position where, for me, it is a penalty. It is a place where your arm shouldn't be in your own penalty area, and there is, I think, and I know it's kind of tight enough, but there is enough time between the ball travelling and the ball striking the body for him to be in control of his body there. And, like, you asked a hypothetical question there, should his arms be tucked in beside his body? I think they should.
Okay, so look at, you can see how the last ditch nature of all of this. It's really like, it's proper old style defending. Now, two of them obviously have, three of them pretty much have their back to the ball, which just shows that that was the prevailing sort of reaction among those players to a shot, where they're like, we want to block this, but obviously they're on the turn. But I'm just asking you, what is he supposed to do with his hands? His hand is quite close to his body. It's not like it's out like this, which is a blatant, like trying to block the ball here. He's just, his hands are like you would do in any...
But his hands aren't right beside his body.
No, but you don't play. You don't run around the football pitch with your hands nailed to your body. Your hands
don't,
basically
but this
move
isn't all
like
around
that.
The football pitch. This is in the penalty area.
Well, like absolutely irrelevant that it's in the penalty area. He's playing football and he's trying to more or less block a shot, and his hands are going to kind of move a bit like that anyway. One hand is kind of up like that, where again that's a sort of a natural reaction when you're half protecting.
But just
yourself.
Because it's a natural reaction doesn't mean it's the right reaction. It doesn't mean it's the reaction that can actually help you avoid this.
What is he trying to gain if he's trying to put his hand in a position where it may block the ball? He's taking a big risk here, because stupid decisions like this are going to be made based on slow motion replays, where the referee is going to say, oh yeah, I'm looking at this over 5 seconds, where it should be like half a second or whatever. What's he supposed to do with his hands? And does he not understand the risk? If he were to do that, if he was able to freeze that moment and say, okay, what am I going to do here? He would never have done that. Like, he didn't put it out to block the ball. He just did it because it was a natural thing to do in a moment of very, very quick play. And you cannot give handballs for situations like that. And it would never be a handball 5 years ago without VAR or whatever.
The noticeable thing was the lack of protest initially. That it was just Diogo Dalo who was the one man who was like, that's a handball, and everybody else was willing to kind of run on with play. But that doesn't excuse that it's the whole thing either. Like, the reaction doesn't necessarily...
I guess
necessarily
that's interesting in that, maybe. But what they saw, I don't know. It happened so quickly.
I would agree with you about the idea of slow motion, that does paint an unfair picture. But as I've already stated, my counter-argument to that is that if he... The slow motion would kind of absolve him if it was from me to you away, if it was that quick, if there was literally no time for any body movement at all that is in your head whatsoever. But I think it's the body turn that does him in. That's my view on it. I just think the body turn does him in, and because of that, the arm is out a bit, and it is, like, you could call it a natural reaction if that's how your body spins, but ultimately that's away from your body. It's like it's in the line of a shot. The fact that it's going over the bar for me is actually a little bit of an irrelevance. I know that was brought up afterwards.
That's
and I know, to be fair, you haven't actually mentioned that. That wasn't part of your argument. But
no, that's
Thomas
neither
Tuchel
here nor
mention
there.
It afterwards.
The fact it's in the penalty area, totally irrelevant. The fact it's the ball.
That's fair.
The ball, wherever the ball was going, don't care. That's nothing to do with this. I mean, I was looking at a few of the reactions here this morning. Craig Burley does make the point that you're a bit cowardly to turn your back, but there is an element of the Alamo about this. It's the last minute. It's like, how are you trying to tell a guy to be composed in the last minute when
that's as similarly as irrelevant though as the fact that it's in the penalty box.
What I'm saying is this is basically lads. It's last ditch defending. They're not thinking like perhaps like this is the first minute of the game, where they're trying to basically throw their bodies in the line. And if their bodies in the line involve their hands being in a position where they're not trying to handle the ball by any means, and they're quite close to your body like this, where you're kind of on the turn, it's never a handball. The bottom line is it really should be deliberate, and then the unnatural position is obviously a sub part of the rule.
I'm not going to lie, I did think it was harsh, but I didn't think it was wrong. Once I saw the referee go to look at this, I was like, he has to give this. Once you've looked at this, I just don't think the idea of a deliberate handball, a deliberate handball, it's a deliberate movement really, isn't it, that results in a handball rather than actually deliberately going out to put your hand on the football. And for me that is a deliberate movement of his body and of his arm subsequently.
Would it have been given without VAR?
No.
But so does that make it right?
Once he goes to VAR, then he sees clearly what's happened, and I know it is slow motion that helps him.
When you
here.
Say though he sees clearly what happened, that's not really true. He sees that it hit his hand. We know there's, like, I mean, Neymar is an idiot for putting up that Instagram. Just show social media when you're either not thinking straight or you're doing things too quickly, because it didn't hit his back, it hit his hand. I've always been on the side of the guy handling the ball without deliberately handling the ball. Every time I play Astro, I seem to be the one who's in the side of the bay, play on. That's just ball to hand, didn't mean it. And to me, this is a terrible decision and would never have been given in the history of football right up until now, really.
I disagree. Thomas Tuchel was remarkably composed in his press conference afterwards. Just before we get to the coming up, just to tell you what he said. He says, I'm a big supporter of VAR and I'm still a big supporter of VAR. With hand, it's a super difficult thing because there are too many points in do we punish it or not punish, distance, natural position, so many things to discuss. I think it's a 50-50 decision. This is the problem with hand. The points people use to support the decision say it isn't. For a shot that was going 50 metres over the bar to get a penalty from 11 metres, there is no logic in that.
I have to really, really laud him for that because... It is,
in fairness, like for a fella who's just kind of got dumped out of the Champions League with a contentious decision.
Yeah, like I'm obviously not 100% right on this, regardless of how long I'm staying here, because there's an argument that you're making that I can see your point about where you are with this. But for a manager to come up to be as composed as that and to be as fair as that, you know, you see Neil Warnock at the weekend when Cardiff lost to... Wolves and the Bennett second challenge, which basically most people would say was a yellow card. It was a kind of a late challenge in the corner, but Warnock saying afterwards, he's basically saying, you know, he's a good referee, but like, you know, he's kind of, it's like Neymar and the VAR. He goes, he obviously doesn't really understand the game if you don't give a yellow card for that challenge. But you can be very demeaning about referees when you say they don't understand the game. The Bennett challenge was a late challenge. In my view, there are far too many yellow cards given for late challenges now, where it's an honest attempt to get the ball and you're a split second late, straight yellow card. I don't agree with that at all. I think the as long as there's intent to get the ball and you know it's a bit late, it shouldn't automatically be a yellow card. But like for the coach to say that is so admirable. I mean, 99% of people would have said that's a terrible decision.
Especially on the losing side. Let's tell you what's coming up on OTBAM this morning. We're going to get to Andy Mitten in a few minutes' time. He was in Paris last night watching that. We'll get his take in a few minutes' time. The shot clock is coming up at 20 past 8. Kieran Donaghy is back in studio for that. The sports news with Darren Cleary then coming up at 10 to 9. And then we'll be looking ahead to Ireland against France at around 10 past 9. Before that, let's go to the back pages. And I'm going to start this morning with the Irish Times. Leading with the rugby this morning, it is a picture of CJ Stander on the front of their sports section this morning. Resolute Stander goes through the pain barrier, says Gerry Thorne leaves peace. And also Gerry writing that the return of the big names adds significantly to Schmidt's options. So Ringrose, Healy, Best, Ryan and Henderson all likely to start for Ireland against France. The Times Ireland edition then leads with what happened in Paris last night. United's glorious triumph reads the headline. First to recover from 2-0 home defeat. Rashford winner after VAR decision.
On the CJ Stander thing, by the way, the pain he must have gone through with that eye socket injury, in fairness to him, like, I... You know, we're debating here about a handball, but these guys, some of these sports people, what they actually do in the heat of battle, it's I found that quite incredible. Like, we see it in racing a lot where, you know, you might be injured in a race or you might kind of break every bone in your body and you get up and do it again. But Stander certainly went up highly in my estimation after that.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah. The Irish Independent leads with a GAA story this morning. They go with GAA bracing itself for a hard Brexit backlash. It's Martin Breteny writing that fears grow around border checkpoints and that they could impact on numbers travelling to games. One of the people quoted is Joe Kernan. He says, not knowing how exactly it's going to work out is the worry for people in every walk of life. And since the GAA is such a large part of cross-border life, we feel it more than most, especially if there are any hold-ups at the border. That's what the former Armada manager has to say. And Mourinho online for Real return, says one of the football stories there. Ireland laughing off Hansen's mind games. And as you can see, there's Romelu Lukaku and his teammates celebrating VAR to the rescue for Manchester United last night. And it is the exact same picture on the front of the Irish Examiner sports section. The greatest escape, reads the headline. Controversial late Rashford penalty leaves Solskjaer's United partying like it's 1999. Johnny, you've got the rest of the newspapers this morning?
Yeah, let's start with the Racing Post. Brittany cheers. Gunners should enjoy short hop cross-channel for their game against Rennes tonight. And obviously, that's a game, I guess, Arsenal have a chance to kind of improve their recent form. Few interesting things in the front as well. Forecast for rain sparks punters to life. It's been a very dry winter, obviously, so there's been a bit of rain going into Cheltenham and on top of water ground, so people are kind of reacting to this. And Richie sets the record straight about shock closure of Betbright. That's probably a piece for another day, but Betbright, the bookmaker, are closing down. Some very, very questionable... basically, Betbright saying that they were going to expunge all anti-post bets, which is really a... Now, this was an issue. I'm not sure how they're going to be taken over by 888, I think, but BetBribe were basically saying if you had an anti-post bet, it's void. So if you had, for argument's sake, there was a guy who had like a bet on three or four teams in the accumulator across the English divisions. He was in an exceptional position at the moment. He could have won about 18 grand if the bet comes off, and they're basically saying the bets are void. There's a massive problem in Britain in terms of regulating what the gambling industry does, and just they can basically sort of do whatever they want. They can shut down accounts, they can encourage problem gamblers, but like basically anyone who's trying to make a few bob honourably, just cull them straight away. A lot of people wouldn't have any sympathy towards BetBright that the business didn't really take off, because, and certainly reading their reaction to how they're going to deal with long-term bets and just basically cancel them was nothing short of disgraceful. And this is The Guardian. Superb United Sun PSG. Rashford penalty completes comeback after Lukaku double. Masters on his mind. McIlroy returns to Bay Hill looking to find best form. I don't follow golf, but a couple of people have told me that McIlroy has a good chance of winning this. I don't know if you agree.
Well, like we have the same conversation about Rory every year. Like when you refer to the Masters, it's like
this. Is it Rory or McIlroy? It's Rory.
That's a good point. I've fallen into the trap of calling him Rory, haven't I? That's probably the worst thing I've ever said in my life. Rory McIlroy.
That was a penalty.
Our Rory always has a chance of winning the Masters, doesn't he? It'd be interesting if you offered Mr. McIlroy the opportunity to win one major this year. Would he pick the Open in his home country, or would he pick the Masters, which has eluded him for so long?
I think he's very, very worried about Brexit's kind of role in terms of Gaelic games around the region, anyway, in the Gold Coast. United's best by VAR. I guess that's a play on VAR, is it? You know?
In the Herald, I think so.
Red Devil, true after video ref drama. And in fairness, a photo of Solskjaer looking like he's in the verge of tears there. Gotta really like the man, you know. I've said all along, I think, you know, he hasn't necessarily done enough to get the job in terms of what he did before Man United, but he's, in the short space of time he's there, he's done a miraculous job, helped by VAR last night, obviously. Easterby leaps to Ireland's defence. Simon Easterby, this is the Daily Mail, has dismissed suggestion that Ireland are struggling to cope. That was obviously in response to Hansen as well. Miracle in Paris, PSG won. Man United 3. Sheedy can't learn on history as he navigates new terrain, and that's an opinion piece on the Tipperary situation. This one's not too bad. In the Mirror, Marc de Triomphe.
Have a morning to you.
I'll give them that. Rashford nets controversial VAR penalty to seal miracle win in Paris. Real and Jose are in talks, and Poch fury over ban and fine. And Standard's brave face. More on the Standard situation there on the eye socket injury.
What?
This is very clever, because considering, you know, your deadlines in newspapers, you've no time to do anything really with a game like this, partly like it's 1999, which is obviously a play on Solskjaer's that amazing, is it 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow. So big kudos to the Daily Star for this one. I like that headline. It's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So they're really in pun mode last night. Last ditch stuff. Last ditch tackling in Paris and last ditch headlines. Miracle in Paris, that's the Daily Telegraph. And that was the same headline. And we have the Marc de Triomphe in the Sun. And don't go for Jose. Real Madrid have been urged not to reappoint him. I'm not sure who that's in. And yes, and Beardo probed. Newcastle have been ordered to reveal their findings from the Peter Beardsley racism and bullying probe. And that's the Sun.
Let's have a look at the Irish news this morning. They go with this story, which is McKernan. Tally's ability to make quick changes, the key for Down. And then a quick look at L'Equipe this morning as well. Encore Pierre. What does that mean, Johnny?
Encore is like, obviously, something like what Pierre means.
Pain again? I don't know what it is.
I studied French in school, but it was a long time ago.
So did I. It's a long time ago indeed. Yeah. Right. We are crossing over to Paris in just a moment, where Andy Mitten will join us to talk through Manchester United's dramatic win last night, where nobody really saw this coming.
Where does this leave the tie? You've got a mountain to climb in Paris now.
Yeah, but mountains are there to be climbed, aren't they? Because you can't lay down and say this is over.
This is the game! That is the goal! Can you believe it? Manchester United revive the ghosts of Fergie time! They've somehow done it again!
how long would you like on your contract? What would your salary like to be? And where would you like the statue?
Fantastic night, eh? It's, I'm just going to do my best until the summer, see what the club decides.
They've only got one decision to make now, haven't they?
I hear you keep saying that. So we just, this tonight we have to remember. A fantastic night. You're just the spirit of Man United. Great to see the boss in there after the game as well, first time. So the lads were just absolutely magnificent.
Like you said, that's the problem. The long time to wait is difficult, but you just try and stay calm and, you know, stay concentrated, because it's a skill that you practice a lot of times when you're younger, and you know it can be basic, but at the same time it can be difficult. So just concentration.
Did you know, you know, where in advance, where you're going to put it, what are you going to do? You had so long to think about it.
No, I was just waiting to see what the keeper would do when I was running up to the ball. But you know, he stays strong, so I go to what I know best, and that's what I know.
I was
Andy Mitten, a very good morning to you.
Oh, there's Andy Mitten. Didn't know he was on the line.
Andy, morning. Just the first place to start, like, I do wonder, as somebody who's been following Manchester United for so long, is this as fun and as bonkers and as beautifully ridiculous as it's ever been? We appear to have lost Andy's connection there. I rudely interrupted you there.
No, you didn't rudely interrupt me, because Andy Mitten was actually ready to come on the line. But I was talking to Stephen O'Donnell recently about the penalty he got for Shamrock Rovers against Belgrade, and he was kind of joking, like, I made Michael O'Neill's career by getting that, because then we got into the European group stage and all that. But he was saying one of the Rovers players, the penalty was given, one of the Rovers players was like, you know, basically a normal penalty taker, and he was like, he absolutely ran a mile. I want nothing to do with this. And even in moments like that, these professional footballers, some pressure, like that penalty last night. I know it was a bit of a smash and grab, but incredible pressure and a brilliant penalty under pressure.
If you're Romelu Lukaku, are you trying to grab the ball and get your hat trick?
No, I wouldn't give a damn. In fairness to Lukaku, like, for a lad who was so undermined in the Mourinho era, he has really shown what a player he can be. Like, yeah, you know, you cannot knock him. And to get two goals, it was a bit, maybe by all accounts, smash and grab last night. But his general play at the moment is really, really good.
Yeah, it certainly is. Andy Mitten, I think we've re-established a connection. How are you?
I'd like a bit more sleep. I'm pumped up with adrenaline. I'm been on the road for 4 days now. I went to Madrid to see that wonderful game with Ajax, and I'm heading off to Nantes today to see Fabio da Silva, and then at 11 p.m. tonight, which seems a different world away, I've got a flight to take. But I'm absolutely buzzing because of what I saw in Parc des Princes last night. I didn't expect it. I thought PSG were by far the better team in the first leg, especially in the second half, and I just didn't expect an injury hit Manchester United team to even get a draw. And there was not a lot of tension among fans in Paris yesterday, 2,500 fans, lots more without tickets. It was a free hit. And before the game, I spoke to Mike Phelan on the side of the pitch, and it was almost as if he was looking more towards the Arsenal game on Sunday. And I said, come on, we can't just give up like this. And then to see what happened, I was stunned when he went ahead. I wasn't surprised when PSG dominated and equalised. Stunned when United went ahead again. But even in the 85th minute, I just didn't expect Manchester United to win, to get another goal. And I'm thinking, whatever happens here, it looks like they're going to win. It's not going to be good enough to take the team through. But Ole Gunnar should get the job on a permanent basis. Ole and his staff, because he always makes a point of it not just being about him. And then in the 89th minute, this big roar went up from the away section, a real defiant, United, United, United. And then there was this confusion, and the referee walked away a couple of minutes later to a screen, and there was a big melee around the screen between the two benches, and it was a penalty. And Marcus Rashford, a kid from Manchester, stepped up, put it in, and it's one of the top five moments in Manchester United's history. It really is that good.
Kid from Manchester.
To come away against such a good team, a team who started to fray. They look like, I've seen Paris bottle it before. I was in Camp Nou when Barcelona surged back and defeated them, and it happened again. But I spoke to people like Patrice Evra there. I spoke to Fred after the match. There was just a huge buzz around the place, and now United fans are looking forward to a last date, which nobody expected, including myself.
Yeah, it really is just remarkable. You touched on it there yourself, like the idea that they had 10 frontliners missing last night. That statistic that flashed up in the first half with 13% of possession at one point. And then at one stage of the game, I just saw another statistic this morning that Chris Smalling had more tackles, interceptions, clearances and blocks than he had completed passes. This was like an unbelievable triumph of survival, wasn't it, Andy?
Yeah, Smalling's been really good, and he's often been a scapegoat among United fans, and not always fair that United fans feel they need to have a scapegoat, but they do. And Smalling has been that person many times. But he was very, very good at Chelsea away in the FA Cup a couple of weeks ago, and I wrote a piece about him. And he was excellent again last night. So I know in the first leg, the two Paris Central defenders, led by the captain, Thiago Silva, were first class, and the two midfielders, Verratti and Marquinhos. But last night was United's night, and I spoke to Andreas Pereira on Sunday, and he said, we're confident, we're looking forward to going to Paris. And I thought, it's easy to say that because you've got nothing to lose, you're not expected to win. And then they won, and so many of the players did well. And at the start, you mentioned that 13% statistic. I looked on the screen and saw that, and I pointed it out to a couple of the journalists. And at the same time, I'm watching Eric Bailly really struggle as a right back. Mm. And sometimes fate plays its hand. He came off injured, and Dalot came on, and he looked more of a threat. But even Dalot, at one point, he swung the ball across the pitch straight to a PSG player. And it was just thinking, this is it's error-strewn at times. And yet, Manchester United were winning 2-1 when this happened. And as Sir Alex Ferguson said in Camp Nou, football, eh, bloody hell. It really was one of those nights.
Yeah, like the main thing that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been given credit for over the past 2.5 months or so has been the ability to reinvigorate the team chemistry and make the dressing room a much happier place. And like you say, Bailly came off injured and all that. I'm giving Solskjaer the benefit of the doubt here in terms of identifying Dalot, bringing him on and all that sort of thing. And is he starting to create this cult of a very intelligent manager who's actually far more tactically astute than we gave him credit for previously?
He's tactically smart. And he doesn't say a lot to the players, but when he does talk, they listen to him. And he uses the first couple of minutes of half-time to get his strong words out of the way. But even when he criticises the players, he does so, they feel, in a constructive manner. And he talks to them like footballers, because he was a footballer himself. He does have the advantage of not being called Jose Mourinho. So he came in and there was a chance for him and anyone else to pick the mood up off the floor. And he did that. He did that from the first day among the staff when he turned up at the worked Christmas function. And among the fans, I stood outside Cardiff City's ground before a ball had been kicked and everyone was completely buzzing. And that was before any football had been played. And that buzz has not dissipated since. Tactically, you could say that he got it wrong in the first leg at Old Trafford. But last night, I wasn't sure whether he was going to play a five at the back. I was talking to Wes Brown before the game, and Wes said, where's Bailly fitting in here? I'm sure he's going to play midfield here. And I thought, you can't put Eric Bailly in midfield against Verratti. And the game started, and it looked to be a very straight 4-4-2. But Solskjaer is smart, but it's not just him. He's very close and takes on board the opinions of Mick Phelan, an experienced coach, Michael Carrick, Kieran McKenna. And even last week when he received an award for being manager of the month, he didn't want to be pictured alone with a trophy. He said, this is a team effort. When he wants the job, he doesn't want it for himself. He wants it for all of them. They come as a team. And somebody very senior at the club said to me, the previous managers, they all had their faults, they all had the positives as well. And quite often both sides were exaggerated publicly, but they were more about them. This is about a team and about a football club that he clearly cares a lot about. Now, that only takes you so far, but it's taken United quite far so far, because they've won all 9 away matches. They've beaten Chelsea away, Arsenal away, Fulham away, Paris Saint-Germain away. It's so unexpected, but it is wonderful for these United fans.
I know you've got to go, Andy, but just one quick word on Romelu Lukaku before we wrap up, because the man was so maligned over the past couple of months. The stuff that was said about him, I thought, was particularly horrible, like on social media and all that sort of thing, during the Jose Mourinho era. Do you think he's proved himself to the point where he's realistically at this moment, Andy, or is he overperforming at the moment under Solskjaer?
I think United still need a new striker because they over-relied on Lukaku, and there's times where he goes for his goal droughts. He was undoubtedly struggling earlier on this season. His body language said it. His words said it. His stock had fallen. The fans were not that bothered about him. They wouldn't have been that bothered if he was sold. But his scoring record recently, he was one of the final players to come good under Solskjaer. And not everyone has. Alexis Sanchez has yet to do that. And a fit and productive Alexis Sanchez would help Romelu Lukaku immensely. But if you compare Lukaku last night with the same, the equivalent tie of last year in Seville, he was isolated, often had no players around him within 20 or 30 metres. Sevilla had 22 shots on target. Manchester United had three. And then last night, he was exhausted towards the end. I was amazed that he wasn't brought off. But he scored the goals. He's scoring goals. If you're a goal scorer, you score goals. Everything else is secondary. And some of the criticism is unfair, but you're looking there on social media. It's very different at the matches. It is. You're seeing the most extreme examples on social media, which get amplified because they're extreme. But the fans have been broadly supportive of him. I'm not going to pretend that he's a cult hero because he isn't. People sing about Solskjaer at the moment. But Lukaku has had a great month and he's a good goal scorer. And I think he can become a great goal scorer for United if the conditions are right. Because while we get carried away with what's going on, there's still a lot of work needs to be done. I think if United played PSG 10 times, PSG would probably win 7 of those times. United do need another striker. They do need a right back. The defence needs to be sorted. And I think give Ole Gunnar the job now. Let him plan ahead. He's got a very good relationship with Edward Wood. There is money there. They're not under pressure to sell like Ajax. I spoke to Ajax fans yesterday. I was in Madrid with them and I felt really sorry for them because they know they're going to lose 7 of the players in the summer. Manchester United do not have that pressure. They're very, very fortunate. They're almost at the top of the transfer tree. And what they've got to do is be smarter in their recruitment and so that there's less Alexis Sanchez's and more of a combination of the players who work and the youth lads who are coming through. It was great that Mason Greenwood, a young striker, came on last night. You're getting young local lads coming through and being given a chance. And that is so important to Manchester United. And Manchester City have got a great youth system, but their players don't get a chance in the first team. At United, they do.
And that's special as well,
like
Andy,
in Paris,
isn't it?
It pays off.
That must be special that like a homegrown kid could score a goal of that magnitude because, you know, the disassociation between local areas and big clubs nowadays such that, you know, it's often quite rare that a young local product is playing. That must have been quite special.
Of course it is. He grew up 3 miles from where I grew up. I support Manchester United. They're my local team. All my mates, they go to all of the matches. And for a lad who your mates know, or in because Rashford's a generation younger than me, my brother knows. And to see him thrive as a Manchester United player and score a goal of that magnitude in the Parc des Princes, of course it adds value to it. This isn't someone who's been brought in on wages of £400,000 a week and talks about always wanting to play for United when you know it's not really true. He's a United fan. He's from Manchester. It adds value to it. And I love the idea of the young players coming through because it's so important. A part of this club, be it lads who've come over from Dublin, George Best from Belfast, and Marcus Rashford from Manchester. It makes football better. And I've got a lot of admiration for what Athletic Club Bilbao do in playing local players. I celebrate Manchester United's internationalness. I love the fact that there are fans around the world. And I go to away games and I meet United fans regularly who've travelled from Cork or Dublin or Galway. The commitment is absolutely incredible. But it's also a great bonus when you get a young Manchester kid coming through scoring a goal like that.
I should ask, just as a final point before we let you go, Andy, just from the people you've heard speaking around the club, it's surely a matter of when, not if, Solskjaer gets the job.
Yes, I was speaking to some pretty senior people yesterday. I'm not going to say that he's been offered the job for certain because he hasn't been. But yeah, I tweeted last night that he should be offered it now and he should be. And I'm pretty certain that is the overriding sentiment. And the club know that. But they've been able to take time because they've had time. But when someone said yesterday to me in Madrid, Solskjaer's doing well, do you think he'd like to come over here? That really spooked me. Professional journalist is like, well, you know, and the fan in me is thinking, no, this can't happen. So as somebody at the club said to me last night, maybe he needs to be linked with another club for Manchester United to make their decision. So I'm officially linking Solskjaer now with Shelbourne.
Ian Morris is already under pressure after one game, two games.
Yeah, we've already got the piece up on the side. Andy Mitten from the Bernabeu to the Parc des Princes. It wasn't a bad midweek for you. Thanks a million for taking the call.
Great to talk to you. Bye-bye.
And Andy sounds relatively fresh. You know, you imagine he had a glass of wine to celebrate last night. He's pretty effervescent at 8 in the morning.
Yeah, he really is. Like, I don't know, or maybe he just did an all-nighter, maybe he's on the rollover and he's just kind of on a constant level.
I was expecting that, because it's just the adrenaline is getting him through.
Like, how long is this adrenaline going to last if you're, like, a hardcore Manchester United fan? I haven't envied Man United fans in a long, long time, but I kind of do after last night, the way it's...
They have a chance of winning the Champions League now. They have a chance of winning the FA Cup. Top four, obviously, very achievable. It could be a hell of a U-turn in a season, and all credit really goes to Solskjaer there, to be fair, that he's just completely turned this round. And you know, the tapping into the Alex Ferguson era, like, Ferguson's what, 77 now, I think, tapping into that era looked a bit, it looks diplomatically a very sensible thing to do, but the more you look at it, I guess there's a bit more to it than that. And that's that photo of Cantona, Solskjaer, and I mean, a lot of us were brought up in that era, in that, you know, they were the heroes. Cantona, obviously, on the left, it was the, I suppose, was the most talked about footballer of when I was a kid growing up. And I hated Man United, absolutely hated Man United. I hated Alex Ferguson. I hated the fact that referees gave decisions like they got last night late on an awful lot. But they were great times, you know, and they had so much characters and so much character in that team, with Keane and Ince and Dennis Irwin, and it was proper football. Even though the Premier League era had begun, it was still proper football, and people look back with so much fondness on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in those days, and you know, kind of trying to be nostalgic and evoking the spirit of that time has really worked out. And I think it seems like the players are sort of buying into the legend of Ferguson as well, having, you know, still been somewhat involved in a ceremonial role, but there is a bit of magic about it, to be fair.
The game was live on Virgin Media Sport last night, and here's what Kevin Kilbane made of it.
How can they not now? How can they not? That I'm totally in agreement with what Graeme's saying in relation to the result itself and the magnitude of the result. Because look at that. Look at United's starting 11 tonight. Look at the history of results at United. They've got big results in Europe. They had world-class stars on the side. There aren't too many, if any, in that United side that you class as world-class. And I just think that the result, who they brought off the bench tonight as well, yes, we know the substitution of Dalot coming on for Bayer. Yeah, that aside, second half, bringing on Chong and Greenwood, two youngsters with no experience of first-team football, little experience of first-team football. And it's just how they dug in together, doing the job, just getting through that game tonight without conceding that second goal. That was key to it. And then going on, and yes, they did have a bit of luck. Don't get me wrong, I thought the penalty was harsh on PSG at the end, but you've got to credit them for staying in the game.
Yeah, Virgin Media Sport is the new home of European football in Ireland, with more than 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games live this season. Virgin Media Sport is exclusive to all Virgin Media TV customers, who can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream all the action whenever and wherever they like. Just a final point on this, Johnny, before we move on, and just to kind of double back on...
You're just going to double back and say you were wrong with the penalty. Yeah. That is the final point. Well, I was wrong.
Kilbane saying it was harsh.
You're
doesn't necessarily
harsh
mean
well.
You're right. I actually want to finish up on Lukaku. Just to kind of talk about what that actually must take for a character like him to be lambasted from all corners, to accept the fact that he isn't in the plans for the starting 11 with everybody fit. And I'm not sure has that actually changed last night. That he looks at Martial, Rashford, Lingard as probably the starting front three, and is happy enough to be a squad player. Now, he might have greater ambitions after last night, but to keep the head up, and like, he's got an ability to sniff out a goal as much as anybody in that Manchester United team. I'm really happy for him after last night.
Yeah, the same thing. There was a moment in the Liverpool game when it was an unbelievably good save by Alisson when it was the nil-all game in Old Trafford there a few weeks ago, when Lukaku put Sanchez in with this absolutely gorgeous slide rule pass. And I was looking at this, I was like, I didn't think Lukaku had that in him. It was a pass of real genius, and Sanchez then kind of...
Was that not Lingard? The chance to, against Liverpool, was this?
It might have been Lingard.
The Alisson save.
Yeah, he smothered the ball on the ground, and it was kind of Man United's only real chance in the game. But Lukaku, I thought it was actually Sanchez, sorry, I'm wrong there. But that Lukaku pass was brilliant. For so long of Lukaku's time at Man United, I felt he's just too slow in general play to move the ball very quickly, one touch. But he's a brilliant goal poacher. We saw that for Belgium, and we've seen it for Man United in at his best. I would imagine Solskjaer has probably said... he's probably been a very good manager, even with players in the periphery, and said, like, you are a big part of this, you know, and there's a big role for you to play. That's what good manager is about. And Solskjaer has shown that he's well able to give a bit of hairdryer treatment, by all accounts. He's not like the kind of the baby-faced assassin
he's not a pushover.
All the time. He's not a pushover. But obviously, whatever he said to Lukaku has worked, because this is not the Lukaku that was playing for Mourinho. And Lukaku was kind of a Mourinho-type player, but obviously Mourinho had lost the dressing room and had lost Lukaku. So... granted, he's paid a lot of money, and he's paid a lot of money to play football to the best of his ability, so he's doing his job, but he's shown a lot of character, and two goals in a game like that is extraordinary, considering that he was playing on the inferior team, the background of the season that he's had, and he's really rewriting the future here in terms of where his role is, because whatever about Lukaku, whatever about your views are, as an impact substitution, like, defenders do not want to be dealing with Lukaku at his best at all. He's very, very physical. He's a great goal poacher. And that was astonishing stuff last night. He's been in unbelievable form the last few weeks, and fair play to him.
Yeah, he certainly has. If you've got any comments this morning, by the way, you can tweet us at Off the Ball, or you can comment on the Facebook or YouTube stream if you happen to be watching there.
Man United fans just not up out of bed yet, a lot of them.
Imagine that. Yeah. Like, it's been a big night for them. Or maybe it's just kind of still a stunned silence after seeing that. We are going to turn our attention, though, to episode 4 of The Shot Clock. It's our brilliant new show with Kieran Donaghy. It's live every Thursday morning here on OTBAM, and you can also catch it on our YouTube channel. Enjoy.
And you're very welcome along to this week's episode of The Shot Clock. It's very simple. We've got 8 topics. We've got an interview. We've got 2 minutes to shoot your shot. And at the end of that, hopefully, you'll all realise that I'm right. That's kind of the rules of the game. The hooter will sound to shut us up, and we promise that this week we're actually going to pay attention to what happens when the hooter sounds. We're basketball heavy this week. Kieran Donaghy from Tinseltown to Tralee. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, very good. I'm looking forward to this. Our first topic this morning is LeBron James and the Lakers. This was supposed to be the move that turned LeBron into a billionaire, that allowed him to branch out to become a Hollywood mogul as well as potentially an owner. But all of a sudden, the appearances on the field and the court have been so bad that people are now wondering if he's going to damage his legacy. They're not even going to make it to the playoffs this year. The greatest player of all time, not in the playoffs. What's going on?
Well, that's your first mistake. He's not the greatest player of all time. He's one of the greatest players of all time. It looks certain now that he's not going to make the playoffs. I've watched a lot of games in recent. He looks old. He looks a small bit injured. He's coming back off a groin injury. He looks disinterested in what's going on in LA at the moment. I think he made the move for maybe possibly. I was reading Kieran Shannon's article this morning, and I agree with him. He made the move for non-basketball reasons. I think he made the move to Miami years ago to win championships. I think this was a bit more of a, we might win championships, but it'd be nice to live in LA. They've got lots of free agents up next year. They've got Caldwell Pope, Tyson Chandler, Rajon Rondo. They've injuries, Lonzo Ball. Kuzma went down with a rolled ankle the last day, so... Yeah, it's his first time in 13 years. He's not going to make the playoffs. But I think more importantly, and a bit more worrying for Lakers fans, is I don't know if superstars will want to go down there next year. If LeBron isn't LeBron, and you know he's going to be 35 next season, and if they see him starting to slow down, they mightn't want to put all their eggs in that basket.
I think that this is just him doing what Jordan did when Jordan went off to play baseball. This is his mid-career taking the season off. You saw that clip in the game during the week where he had to be pushed out to defend. He's just having a little bit of downtime. This is him resting his body in full view of everybody, and he'll be back next year, and everybody will want to play with him, because of course, if he wins a championship with the Lakers, that cements his status as the greatest of all time.
Yeah, but he's got to go do it. And right now, I don't know. They've got to make a big few signings come the next next window, because you know I'd be honest, if I was there, there'd be other teams I'd be looking to go to rather than go to the Lakers, because there's a lot of, the Lakers is kind of like a Dublin Kerry scenario. There's a lot of pressure the minute you put on a Lakers uniform, so it's not a place where you can kind of go and ease yourself into winning championships. You're kind of going there, the pressure's going to be on you straight away. You're going to be playing with LeBron James, you're going to be expected to win championships. You have to look to all the legacy.
Yeah, that is loud. Where are we going next?
Liverpool, are they choking, Ger? Or is everyone, even myself included, are other people, are Liverpool fans, the Liverpool players, are they just becoming aware of just how good this Manchester City team is, and have they seen the writing that's on the wall? Can they go win this league?
I don't think they're going to be able to go and win the league, but I also don't think that that automatically means they're choking. They've put themselves in this position by playing the best football that they've managed in the Premier League, potentially in history. There was that one year where obviously they were good under Brendan Rodgers when they had Luis Suarez, who was so far ahead of the rest of the league that it wasn't really true. This time, they've come up against an absolute juggernaut in the best manager potentially of all time, who now has unlimited funds and who has had enough time to build the squad that he wants to make sure that Manchester City are capable of absorbing any of the injury issues that they've had. So there was a period where they didn't have Kevin De Bruyne and they managed to get through that. If Liverpool lost a player of De Bruyne's talent, suddenly you're looking at Daniel Sturridge or Divock Origi coming into the side, and that's just not good enough if you want to win the league over the course of the 38 game season or whatever it is. So I don't think they're choking. I think that they've reached a point where they're peaking. Now, it's a good sign, because next season, if they add a few more players and they get the bench not to be Origi and Sturridge and actually players who are not that far away from their front three, then perhaps this is a team that's actually using this as a stepping stone, as opposed to a team who's just coming and fading back. I don't think they're choking. They're coming up against one of the best teams that there has been in the Premier League, who have been pretty much unstoppable apart from a few random blips. It's not done. It's not completely finished. Man City will have some big games in the Champions League that they have to live up to, but I don't think they're choking.
There was that game though, they were 7 points ahead, right? And if they'd have won, they would have been 10 and they would have been breathing space. And it's, they've had four draws, 2-1-1s, 2-0-0s for a team that was scoring all these goals earlier on the season and last season. It just strikes me that I think they feel that the writing's on the wall a bit. I'd prefer to see Liverpool win the league than Man City, so I hope they do it, but I just think that they're starting to kind of stumble over that finish line.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you on that. I think but we're like two of the only people in the world outside Liverpool actually want them to win. Let's move on, because I want to talk about Tommy Walsh. This was going to be the bit where I blow my own trumpet, but I've got to hand some of the credit over to Tommy Rooney here. He was the one who was like, here, you've got to talk about Tommy Walsh, because the influence that he's having and the impact that he's having, everybody's talking about the kids and what Peter Keane is doing with that team of kids in Kerry, but actually it's this old head who has like the confidence of the years of struggle and success that he's put together. He's playing really well, and it looks like, I think, that maybe he is actually going to be a starter from this point forward for Kerry going on. What do you think?
He was an absolute colossus on Sunday in every facet of the game. We spoke about him last week. Above in tune, he was being obviously marked by this Galway blanket defence that they're using at the moment, and he kind of, you know, he toughed it out inside there. He started getting on ball, he started linking play through the hands, then he went out to midfield and caught three big kick outs at a time Kerry needed, and he was a general leader for them. What I loved about the last day is just everything he did, he was so authoritative in it. He got a ball in 20 minutes into the first half, turned onto his left leg. And the minute he got the ball, I said, Tommy's going winding up with that. He's going to put this on the left, which is a hard kick into the top goals in Fitzgerald Stadium. They're just a tough goal to kick into. And he takes this thing off his left, and he just looks so confident over it. And I kind of, just when I saw that sail over, I said, "This the big man's back, and he's back with a vengeance." He had 25 possessions the last day as a former full forward. That's a ridiculous number for a full forward to have. He had four advanced marks. He kicked three of those, dropped one short. He kicked the screamer with his left from play. He won four out of six hot balls, so he's guaranteeing you hot balls as well. Any hot ball that's around the forward line, Tommy's going to win it. He got three scorable frees off of him. He had one assist. So he was kind of involved in eight scores, but he also had hockey assists, Jerry. I don't know if you're aware of hockey assists, but I used to count them in my own head as my own little stat, where I'd win a ball, I'd give it to Declan Sullivan coming off my shoulder, Declan would pop it to the Gooch, and Gooch would throw it over. I felt I had a big part to do with that score, but would never get the recognition. Tommy had four of those as well the last day. So if you count his hockey assists, he was involved in 12 out of the 17 points. So it bodes well for the summer, and it gives Kerry serious options. I think come the summertime, when everybody's back fit and healthy. He's a viable shout to start, but I just think he'd be so much more valuable to Kerry with 25 minutes to go, because he covers all the scenarios. He covers you if you're losing a game, you need a big man in the edge of the box. He covers you if you're struggling for possessions, you need him to go to midfield. He covers you as a leader late on, whereas if you don't have him late on, you're not going to have all those things. So it's a real case of he's probably good enough to start, but you might hold him.
Are you leaving the bit out there where Declan Sullivan would dribble past three players and then pop it off to the Gooch, and you're still giving yourself a hockey assist?
I wouldn't give myself a hockey assist if Declan did his slamming run through three players, but I certainly would when he just popped it off.
fair enough. All right. To the Dubs next, I think, is it?
Rory O'Carroll, he's back. One of the best fullbacks around. Jim Gavin's got to bring him in, right? You know, he's just too good. He looks like, you know, he's one of these typical Dubs that no matter how he's away, he keeps himself in good shape. But back in training with Kilmacud, but I'm sure his phone's going to be hopping soon. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that, like, the one thing that Jim Gavin has done is he's made everybody sit and wait it out. Even when Jack McCaffrey came back, it was in the middle of the year. When Paul Mannion came back, they all had to wait that little period of time so that nobody felt like somebody was being given special treatment. And in the long run, it worked out. But it's a high-wire act, especially at the moment, when you see all of the goals that Dublin have conceded so far in the league are effectively, one of them was like an accidental high ball into the full forward line where it was a shot balloon that went up into the air like a Gary Owen, and it ends up breaking, and Roscommon end up scoring off the back of it. If you're Jim Gavin, you must be looking at that going, I see a bit of a trend here, high balls into our full forward, into our full back line, and we seem to be at sixes and sevens. The one man that they have who might be available to fix all that is Rory O'Carroll. Do you break the rules that have made you so spectacularly successful so far and change the habit of a lifetime and bring him straight back in? I'm just not sure that Jim Gavin is a man to change his habits.
Well, that's what we're led to believe, that these guys had to wait it out, but I wouldn't be quite so sure if Jim didn't have a nice little quiet phone call and said, look, go back with the lads, get your 5 or 6 weeks in, you know, dip your toe back in the water, and once you're moving well, don't worry about it. Here's your weights program. We'll call you back in a few weeks. I would say that phone call was made, even though we wouldn't hear about it. But he's a definite serious option for the Dubs to have.
So the Tommy Walsh example earlier is a good one. They brought him straight back into the panel and it didn't work out, and everybody said, oh, that was it. But it took him a little bit of time. Maybe Dublin learn from that and give Rory O'Carroll a month or two club football and then bring him straight back.
No, I saw Rory O'Carroll absolutely melt some fella on Twitter last night out in New Zealand in a football game. So he was playing football out in New Zealand. He's been tipping away. Tommy Walsh was outside learning how to kick this oval ball for 6 years and didn't touch an O'Neill's except when he was playing international rules. So, no, they're not the same comparison. And plus, what touch do you need to be a fullback? Just go out and kill all around you, and Rory's well able for that, trust me.
Yeah, okay. You've got some personal experience of that, do you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I think we've got some pictures of it there. There's you in the midst of three Dubs. It's like a Renaissance picture. He's got your jersey. Yeah. You seem to have his neck. So, you know, it's a fair trade-off.
They were probably pulling and dragging out of me.
Oh, the whole time, yeah. I'm not even sure if that's Cluxton. It looks like a league game because, it could have been. No, I'm not sure who the goalkeeper is there. Yeah, there's three of them there. You had good times at Rory.
Yeah, no, my last great battle with him was in 2015, my first game as captain of Kerry, and it was a titanic battle in Hailstone. I don't know if you remember the game, but Hailstone was flying across our faces in Killarney. And yeah, we went to war that day, but he was a good guy that would bring it to you hard on the pitch, but there was never anything kind of carried off afterwards. It was always a handshake, but he was a tough bit of stuff, trust me. And I would say if he gets two months into him, he'll be some option for Dublin come the summer. But that's what makes Dublin the greatest squad of all time. They're the greatest squad of all time because they've been able to do without Rory O'Carroll. They've been able to do without Mannion, Connolly. They've been able to do without Jack McCaffrey. So they had the best squad of all time. But we're still going to hold the debate on the best team of all time.
One last question for you before we move on. We're supposed to, but I'm going to break my own rules. So imagine that they say no, they don't want him, and they leave Connolly and Rory O'Carroll out of the squad, and they don't win five in a row. It would be always the biggest asterisks in history. Why didn't you just bring the lads back? Just bring them back. See if they can do anything. Have them on the bench. Just make them warm up. The crowd will go mental.
Yeah, absolutely. It's whatever about Connolly, there's obviously issues there, but I would say O'Carroll would seem to me be like an easy fit back into that squad.
Let's move on. March Madness, Irish style. This is an incredible story from Tralee this week. They are queued around the block to buy tickets for the biggest game in basketball in Ireland this year. We've got some footage there in the bottom corner. People are able to see it, including some of the actual players buying tickets for this game. Kieran, what's going on?
Yeah, no, Fergal O'Sullivan there, our captain's in the queue with his baseball hat on buying his five tickets. So there was no concessions for any of the players, believe you me. We had to go get our tickets like everybody else. But look, the game was sold out. It was sold out in 24 hours. The shop, Garvey Super Value, was closed for 12 of those hours. It's a great game in the season. We're the last two teams in the league on four losses, so it's a do or die game. But you know, the buzz around Tralee certainly, and even talking to Mary Maguire, they're involved with Basketball Ireland. You know, they're really looking forward to the game. They're streaming the game Saturday night. They expect big numbers watching it. Top of the table clash. We're going to have smoke machines. We're going to have lasers. We're going to have lights out. We're going to have a fan zone. We face painting. We have as much fun as you can have for your €5 and your €8 to bring your kids to a game. But if you've missed out on the tickets, you've missed out. But no, it's great. Basketball is booming in this country. We have a lot of kids playing in the real March Madness that'll be, you know, that are kids that are involved in colleges that are going for spots in the real March Madness happening in America soon. So, look, it's the largest indoor sport played in the country. It doesn't get enough publicity. I've been shouting from the rafters for the last 2 years to try and get it up there. And look, we're doing good stuff in Tralee, and I think the league is improving as well, of putting on more of a show for their fans in their own venues. So it's there's big buzz down here.
Yeah, but you must be starting to see that the shouting from the rafters is beginning to pay off. That, like, those scenes are not scenes that we see all the time. We certainly haven't seen it for a while in basketball, but it is having an impact.
It is, yeah, and I think it's, you know, when we started the Garvey's Warriors 4 years ago, we said that we were going to make sure that it was a show for the kids. So if you bring your kids along, Ger, that you're actually, it's you're getting more than a basketball game. A basketball game is one part of it, but there's half court shots. There's kids playing at halftime in front of large numbers in a packed complex. You've got your 11 and your 12 year olds trying to get their baskets. They're buzzing after the game. We've mascots before. We've national anthems. We're just doing things, bringing slightly more effort to putting on a show. It's a very cheap version of the NBA, extremely cheap, Ger, but we're trying.
Yeah, no, you've got to keep trying. That's exactly what the sport needs. And so, well done, and best of luck this weekend. I'm not going to wish you too much luck because our special guest this week is going to be up against you. We'll get to that in just a minute. But before we do, we're going back to Madrid.
Yeah, the Boo Boys in Madrid that we spoke about last week, when you compared them to some other fans that I won't go into. But it's. The whole Bale thing and the booing him after what he's done and the goals he got in Champions League finals, and he's 65 goals in 120 games, and you know the treatment he's getting is scandalous to my eyes. What are your thoughts on it?
I think that you can't be whining if you're Gareth Bale or Gareth Bale's agent. You're getting $350,000 a week net, so the wages of sin or death. If you are at a club where the expectations are so high and you've performed so well in the past and you've been part of that, then I'm sorry, you just have to get on with it and live with it and come out the other side in terms of form or leave. Like if at this stage that's the bit of your career where you're going to earn this, then you've got to go on and move. And if you need to take a pay cut to be happy, then your happiness is more important than the money. You've already banked enough, you're going to be grand. The one thing I'd say about Bale is that he hasn't apparently properly integrated himself into Madrid life. There are some rumours that he still doesn't properly fully speak Spanish, that he hasn't become a Madridista, that he kind of lives in a little Welsh enclave. And that's fair enough. If you're going to go and live there for a little while and go home again and that's your intention. But it's Madrid. It's beautiful. There's amazing culture. There's amazing history. And you're so rich, you can afford to live there properly. Get a proper Spanish tutor. Learn some Spanish. Give them a bit of jet back. They'll love you for it.
Yeah, isn't it a great language to speak in a way? I'd love to be able to speak it. If I was out there for it, I'd definitely have the best tutor. It would be drilling me. What about booing Ramos? What's Ramos going to get next week in the next game? Is he going to get booed? The major Madrid, the Madrid, they love him in Madrid. He's everybody else hates him, but they love him in Madrid. He gets purposely sent off a number of weeks ago, misses last night, and they get battered by Ajax.
Yeah.
So I hope he gets a bit of treatment on Sunday, because you know, to it's really bringing the kind of the rules of the game into disrepute if you're going to really try and get sent off on purpose.
It's the perfect Sergio Ramos story, and it might even be the perfect end of a Sergio Ramos career, where there is a film crew filming his reaction to his team being beaten at home for his own documentary series. It's like, wow, you have jumped
Netflix,
the shark, buddy.
Netflix are laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, it's sensational. So I can't wait to see that episode. And you know what? I definitely am going to watch that entire thing, because Sergio Ramos is one of the most compelling figures in world sports. I mean, he is a thundering bastard, but when he's on your side, it's like, yeah, that's great. I want this guy on my team.
You love him. I think we'd all want him in our team, no?
Yeah. I mean, you know. Yeah. You know a lot about this, right?
Get out of here.
Let's move on, because we do have our special guest this week. Jason Killeen, you're very welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so this is very, very unusual, and it's one of the things that makes me think that basketball is definitely one of the most progressive sports in the country, because it turns out that on one line we've got Kieran Donaghy, and on the other line we've got you, and you guys might well end up marking each other in a top-of-the-table clash this weekend. How's it going?
Yeah, very good. I'd say there's a fairly good chance of that this Saturday.
So you're from Limerick. You understand exactly the wildness that Tralee can bring to something like this. Yeah, are you informing your Temple Oak teammates about what they can expect?
Yeah, I think over the last couple of years, we've had a couple of matchups with Temple Oak and Tralee, so the lads are very aware of what to expect when we go down there.
Tell us a little bit about your own season, because it's actually going really well for you guys.
Yeah, you know, it's a long season, so a couple of ups and downs. We lost a few games early on that we're kind of kicking ourselves over now, because it's put us in a position at the, you know, the title race now at the end of the season. But for the most part, doing well. You know, we won the cup last year, which was great, but Tralee knocked us out of the first round of the cup this year, so that was a big disappointment, and that was at home as well.
This is a really massive game in terms of your season, because the way that the fixtures have lined up, Tralee and Marion have to play each other back to back in the final 2 days of the season. If you guys win this, there's a bit of daylight between you guys then.
Yeah, so we've decided, whoever looking at it, we'd be on top in points right now, but that won't mean much at the end. We've played two more games than Tralee. So that would be the two Marion games that they have to finish up with.
Bird in the hand, two in the bush though, right?
Exactly. I'll take the two wins at the moment.
Jason, your own career has been pretty nomadic. As far as I know, you played college ball in the States, and then you played a little bit in Europe before you came back to Ireland. So you're very well placed to talk about the, we've been talking a little bit about the growth of the sport and how Tralee in particular, through, you know, just sheer willpower, have managed to reanimate that whole hotbed of basketball as it would have been traditionally. What's your take on where the league is at the moment and how it's going?
I think, I mean, obviously people talk about the glory days of the 80s and 90s with basketball in Ireland, but for me, this at the moment in 2019, this is the best it's been. You know, the standard of the league is getting better. And I think it's not just the standard of the imports that are being brought into play, it's the standard of the Irish players that is making the league better. It's probably an influx of, you know, foreign nationals and kids coming in that brought basketball with them. But, like you said, being from Limerick, Kerry was always a hotbed of basketball, and I think the interest was always there. And, you know, fair play to Tralee for getting a structure around that. And, you know, since Tralee stepped up and went Super League, to have the big crowd. Now you see Killarney has a team, you know, Killorglin has a team, and there's just basketball has seen a real resurgence down there.
Kieran, tell us how good Jason is, will you? You can butter him up in advance of trying to take him down at the weekend.
Yeah, well, you know, he's been a huge player for the Irish national team over the whole period of his career. As you said, he played in Europe professionally. He's a big man. He's a kind of a 6'10 Michal Quirk. So so I'm not looking forward to Saturday night to marking him. I wish we had our 7 foot Dusan Bogdanovic to hop off him for a while. But it'll be a great contest Saturday night. We've had great battles with Temple Oak. You know, we've had serious games in them over the years. They put us out of the league 2 years ago with a huge win above in Temple Oak. We beat them this year above there in a cup game where we played out of our skins really to win. So look, Saturday night is obviously it's huge. If Temple Oak win, it kind of looks like the league is theirs. If we win, it throws it into a three team mix. So look, last year we had five teams going into the last two weekends of the season that had a chance to win the league. So as Jason says, the standard is at extremely high level. When I came in, I was probably the only Irish player on our team that could dunk it. You know, we'd own Quigley last week for Tralee. He three dunks out in the break. You know, a lot of kids are playing above the rim these days. The athletic ability has gone through the roof. We have so many Irish kids playing at a really high level out in college in America. They'll look to maybe come back to Europe. Or what I'd love to see is if the teams could work on it is them come back to their home clubs and really bring on the level again, which is quite possible if the clubs had more fundraising, had more sponsorship, and could pay these hometown heroes to return instead of what Jason did coming back from college, going to a country in Europe. If he could have came back to Limerick, if they had the money to pay him. So that would be the ultimate way for it to go, I think. But look, it's going to be a belter on Saturday night. It's sold out. It's going to be packed to the rafters. We're going to have a great atmosphere. They're Temple Ogre, a great team. We've been very competitive the last 3 years. We've one of the best point guards in the league, a guy called Paul Dick. They've got three or four Irish internationals themselves, and they've got the best American that was in the league last year, a guy called Dee Proby, another 6'10" monster. So we'll be a bit undersized the weekend, but looking forward to the battle nonetheless.
Jason, do you feel that you're all connected? Like, I know obviously you're all going out at the weekend to try and kill each other, but that there is actually a proper basketball community developing at the moment where you can begin to work with your rivals to build a rivalry up, but also to help grow the sport. Because ultimately, the more the sport grows, the better it's going to be for you guys as individuals and for your teams as collectives.
Well, that's it exactly. And I think Karen touched on something there with, you know, companies getting involved and sponsorship, and that everyone that's involved with the basketball community knows what it has to offer, you know, and what the sport brings. And I think it's becoming more and more popular now with kids, especially that they have phones and, you know, you can look at NBA highlights and you have access to all that. So it's trying to make people aware now that there's a very high standard of basketball being played in Ireland at the moment, and the more people that get behind that and the more people that get involved, the faster it's going to grow. You know, Karen was talking about Quigley having three dunks last week. I think Lorca Murphy might have had 6 or 7. So there's lots of players, like you said, that are playing above the rim, and just the standard is getting better year on year.
Jason, did you pull down a ring, do a Shaq and pull down a ring in DCU last week, 2 weeks ago?
That was 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, Gerard, try and get that highlight up there. It's just the young fella on the phone, Killeen, going for a two-handed and nearly brings down the backboard like Shaq did a number of years ago. So we've got a bit of everything going on in the league.
Why is the improvement in athletic ability happened, Jason, since you have been away, you've come back, you've seen it? What do you put it down to?
Well, it's the work that the kids are putting in. A lot of kids now are getting away. Like, I played in high school and college in America, and I was almost an outlier at the time to do that. There wasn't a lot of kids doing it. But now, you know, we could be 20, 30 kids in America playing, and they're all getting coached at a very high level, and they're understanding, you know, the strength and conditioning. And when they come back, they're bringing that with them. And it's just improving again. And you have people like Puff Summers who are doing camps all over the country. And, you know, kids are just, they have an appetite for it now, and they want to get better.
Yeah, Kieran, is that it? It's just a good quality coaching, more people doing it, the standard raises. Because it always seemed to me like Ireland is a very basketball-friendly country. We've got these not great winters. We've got GAA halls all around the country and basketball facilities. It's really cheap to play, ultimately. So it's kind of the perfect Irish sport.
Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful sport, Joe, because you're on a team of 12. You know, you get very close to your teammates. You know, you find a way to get on with everybody because you have to, because they're all on the court. You know, they're all coming in and out. You're subbing in and out. You're learning to deal with little things during a game, like being taken off if you've had a bad run, and how to respond from that. That when you get a chance to come back in, that you got to deliver. And I think it's a great sport to gain mental toughness. It's a great sport to have awareness about your game. You know. Know what's left in the clock, and that refers very well to all other sports. So it's a great learning game. It's, as you said, it's dry, it's indoors, you know, it's safe. There's no major collision injuries. You're going to pick up your knees and your rolled ankles and all them things that everybody gets in most sports, but you don't have any major collisions, unless Jason Glean hits you with his spin move and his elbow up around his chin, which is quite an impact. But if you kind of go with, if you go with a game that's ideal to bring your young fella or your daughter to, it's such a great start. And as Jason said, there's camps around the place where kids can get in there for a week. They can really learn off of people. They can try and be inspired. And it's a game that you can go practice by yourself in a hall where you can get 400 or 500 shots up in an hour and go out the door without burning up. Like, if you try and take 500 shots at a Gaelic football post, you're going to do a lot of running if you're by yourself. Whereas in basketball, the ball's coming back out to you. So it's a great game. Look, it's a game we obviously love as a community, but it's a game that's growing at a rapid rate in the country, and a game that people have to start bringing their kids to if they're going to get to the top level games in Ireland, which is the Super League.
Jason, last question for you. Kieran Donaghy is a fairly famous on-field persona when it comes to Gaelic football. Is he as lippy on the basketball court as he was on the football pitch?
Oh, definitely. That's why they bring in the big crowd, so the camera can hear him on the floor during the game, you know.
I wish you the best of luck, lads, especially you, Jason, this weekend. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks very much. Bye now.
Thanks, Jess.
So this is a big game, Kieran. Are you going to give us a prediction for this on our prediction slot, or are you shying away from these bold predictions about the imminent game this weekend?
No, I got to back ourselves, right? I'm going to take the Warriors by 3 in a titanic battle.
There you go. Streamed live on the basketball.
What about you, Joe? What's your pick? Are you going with the favourites, Temple Og, or are you going with the underdogs?
I'm going to go with Temple Og, just to piss you off, Kieran. Just to piss you off.
I knew you'd do that.
I can't believe they're road favourites, though. Come on, no one's going to surely go down to Tralee and be favourites on the road, given the show that you guys are putting on.
They have 4 Irish internationals, and they have 2 guys that are 6'10", and they've won a league and a cup, 2 cups in the last 2 years. So
I've picked
they are favourites, trust me.
Let's talk about Ireland-France this weekend. The performance against Italy was pretty poor. Everybody's kind of pissed off about it. All sorts of conspiracy theories abounding about why teams have suddenly worked Ireland out. Maybe it's not a conspiracy theory at all. Maybe it's just the natural progression that they started to do some video analysis of it. What's going to happen when Ireland play France at the Aviva on Sunday?
I got this wrong last time, so I have to be slightly careful. I was saying that Ireland get 6 tries against Italy, but there something tells me that these 2 weeks of kind of reflection and, you know, they would have had time to work on things and try and iron out the kinks. I know they've been obviously doing that, but when you get a bit of breathing space and, you know, the performance wasn't great in Italy, and I don't think it can... You know, not to use the word, it can't get any worse, but I don't think it can. I think they can kind of go out there this weekend with a bit of freedom. So I'm going to take Ireland by 10.
Okay, I think Ireland are going to win by about 6 points. I think that they might just squeak a late bonus point as well. So Ireland to win that one. The other big game this weekend, Arsenal against Manchester United. We've seen Ole Gunnar Solskjaer win games that he, on the paper, seemed to have no right to win. Is he going to be able to go to the Emirates and win a big game against Arsenal this weekend?
I'm going with Arsenal. I think they're just due a big game, and I'm gonna go with Arsenal this week, 2-1 maybe, a late winner.
I think the Solskjaer train has left the station, and we're all on board. So I'm going for Man United to win. Best of luck this weekend, Kieran, and you know, try not to elbow the 6'10" guy because you might anger him.
Yeah, I'll elbow him in the belly button.
Another shot clock is in the books. Thanks a million. We'll see you next week. Look.
Hard not to love Star, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff from them. Obviously recorded yesterday before Manchester United's win. And also, given his basketball take at the top there regarding Jordan over LeBron, before LeBron went and overtook Michael Jordan last night in the all-time scoring list with 32,293 points at the moment, 4th in the all-time list. Great stuff there. You can watch it back on youtube.com/offtheball if you missed any of it, and you can email shotclock@offtheball.com if you've got any suggestions for the lads to talk about next week. We do want to talk a little bit more about the rugby, because there's some brilliant quotes from CJ Stander in the newspaper this morning, but ultimately it is the Sean Cronin story which is still dominating the rugby pages this morning. It's been a fairly ruthless dismissal, hasn't it, of him from the squad for this weekend. And Simon Easterby was in front of the media yesterday, and he says it's a specialist position that we need to build depth in, and he says that we know a lot about Sean. He's been in the camp for a long time, he's got a lot of caps, and it's an opportunity for us to see a bit more of other players. That doesn't exclude him from next week, and it certainly doesn't exclude him from us going forward. Like, it is, your heart kind of goes out to him a little bit, but ultimately was a performance good enough for him to maintain a position where they want to actually identify new players in?
Yeah, I guess it was ruthless, but it was a shocking, by Ireland standards, it was a shocking line-out display against Italy. And I think Ireland were pretty poor in large sections of that game, and maybe it was kind of like one of those signals of intent from Schmidt. It's like, this is what, you know, this is what we're at here. You know, if you're, if, it's personally very, very harsh on him. Like, it's obviously tough to take. It's kind of a bit of a public humiliation as well. You know, we all have our off days, and you'd wonder where his World Cup. I mean, they have to say he's in the World Cup picture and that, but you'd wonder where he is going forward, because this is just like a kind of a slash and burn job. He's out of the picture at the moment, and it's very, very tough. But Schmidt is, that's Joe Schmidt. He's very, very ruthless.
He has to be as well. Mm. I think at this point, it's interesting listening to Donny talk about how they can have that 2 weeks to actually turn it around. It is kind of reminiscent of his own team in 2009 when they were so crap for so long and ended up winning in All-Ireland.
Yeah.
Like, there is a possibility to turn that performance around. You do wonder if it is possible in rugby when there's so many different systems that seem to be failing at the moment.
Yeah, but I think psychologically, I think the Scotland game, they weren't great, but against Italy they always looked like they were going to win, and the crisis talking about Ireland would probably be be very much overblown. I think the France game is perfect for them now, because France are coming in on the back of a good win, and it'll give them a bit of a test, and it's far from over. Like, Ireland are, yeah, a lot has gone wrong for them in the group with Sexton and obviously Carberry, the full back position, obviously the line out the last day. Plenty has gone wrong. The stuff about the favourites mantle from Hansen, the mantle of dealing with being world class, I possibly weighed on them a bit in the England game. I think we did go into the tournament a bit overhyped, and we've obviously done star tournaments very well, but it's an awful lot to play for.
Let's hear from Simon Easterby. Actually, he was speaking in front of the media yesterday.
You know, their worst critics in terms of their performance. You know, I think I think Sean has gone pretty well. There'll be a couple of lineouts that went astray, and you know, some of them are strategy. That, you know, there's so many elements to a lineout that maybe from the outside you look at it and go, oh, it's a lost lineout. But actually, when you look at what happens in a lineout, there's so many combinations. If you get one of those things wrong, one element of the lift, the jump, the throw, the movement, then, you know, it's probably the hooker that gets a little bit of the pressure. So I'd say we've been pretty happy with Sean and what he's produced prior to coming in and while he's been in camp. And again, I'll come back to it. You know, it's about the opportunity to develop some depth in that position. And what happened in the Italy game was, you know, I hold my hand up, a little bit of strategy that didn't quite go our way. The opposition read a couple, and that sometimes is the case. And unfortunately, when it's just looking at pure figures and what you guys see, you just maybe pick on one thing, and the line out is you know, it's more complex than that.
Yeah, interesting stuff there from Simon Easterby speaking yesterday ahead of the France game. Not as interesting as CJ Stander, I dare say. His quotes in the newspapers this morning are incredible. He's talking about that injury that he sustained in the England game, which there was a lot of kind of conjecture around, but it was kind of from his brother-in-law's social media post, so I think it was conjecture that we kind of trusted with regards to the eye socket injury and all that. Basically, CJ Stander is a beast of a man who doesn't really feel pain like the way the rest of us mere mortals feel pain. He says, it wasn't really that sore. I thought it was a nose break when it happened. He says, my nose has broken probably 6 times since December, so I thought it was just normal and kept on playing. He's broken his nose 6 times in the space of 3 months. He says, I blew my nose just after halftime and I could feel this little bump. I think when you wear a scrum cap, you got a bit of tunnel vision, and I didn't really feel anything. When the doctor told me to get off, I took it off, and it felt like my cheek was sitting in the wrong spot. It wasn't really sore, it just went numb. I severed a nerve earlier, about 4 years ago, going down from my eyebrow to my teeth, so there would be numbness anyway. That just flared up again, so I couldn't really feel anything anyway. He says then that the worst part was that he couldn't eat for a couple of weeks, that he was just having soft food and using protein shakes and things like that. He can't really make food anyway, he says, so it wasn't easy.
He'd prefer to eat it. It's quite a contrast to Neymar, isn't it, who we showed earlier, you know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of pain. Like, whether he should be playing on, obviously, is another thing. What was he, about 20 minutes on the pitch with a broken eye socket, I think?
I don't have the exact number.
Off the top of my head, he played for an extended time.
Yeah, and you could see when he was on the pitch that something wasn't right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, is he only just good at taking pain? think there's something about CJ Sander where he actually gets a buzz out of it. Like, he talks about this idea of big hits in rugby, and he says, I like running into someone and getting a good hit. It's a personal battle every time, and you run onto a pitch, and when you get a good hit, sometimes you go, that's a good effing hit, man, and I can't wait for the next one to get someone else back. There's a feeling I get from carrying and tackling. I think all of us do. It's a physical game, and things can happen. We all love that feeling. It's a good feeling, a bit of tingling in your stomach when you get a hit.
That's not how I would have, yeah.
He talks about hits like people on Instagram talk about puppies. It's like this cute little thing that makes his that tickles his soul. He talks about as well this incident that he had when he was a kid, when he was 6 years old, the bad injury he got when he was on the farm, which wasn't as bad as the one he got against England. So he says that his dad was going to feed the calves, and himself and his cousin were on the farm. And his cousin was like, your dad is going to leave us. And I was 6 and he was about 15. We ran after my dad. There was this narrow field, so you could just reverse back and he couldn't see us. We jumped on. He was fine, his cousin, he says, but I missed a step and fell underneath, and I hit my head on the ball joint where the trailer hitches on. And then I just remember my dad grabbing me from underneath and saying, what are you doing? And I was like, sorry about that. I had a scar and I went to school on the Monday morning. That was a Sunday evening. That's what happens on a farm. Me and my younger brother were loose on the farm, so we used to get those hits early.
That's great stuff. We all, I'm from a farming background as well, a few memories of skirmishes and all that, but that the talk about like really embracing and almost like reveling in being battered like on the rugby pitch is interesting. Maybe that is a mindset. Like, I wouldn't have thought that's how you, I would have thought you want to be making the hits, not really inviting them.
Yeah.
But obviously there's some sort of communal kind of appreciation of just the whole aggressive nature of it. But I would never play anything with a broken eye socket.
No, neither would I. I'm not sure Neymar would either, to be honest.
And I certainly wouldn't want to be eating through a straw for 2 weeks. I've never had to do that. You've got to enjoy your food.
Well, that's it. Well, some people do that voluntarily. Like John Conlon was talking about blending all his food last year in the middle of the summer for Championship Hurling. I don't know why you do it voluntarily, but obviously CJ Sander had to do it because of this.
There's little more depression than, you know, your Nutribullets and all that stuff. Like, and people eating this kind of green mix of, you know.
Are you not a Nutribullet man, no?
It's grand, but like, you know, small doses now, in fairness. Food is to be enjoyed and eaten and get your toothpick out afterwards, you know.
Yeah. So I didn't realize. So you have enjoyed, obviously, the occasional Nutribullet.
The occasional one, yeah. But, it's a bit of a craze, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. We're going to get Darren Cleary in just a moment to keep us up to speed on what else is happening in the world of sport this morning. We're going to talk a little bit about the Ireland team as well, because there's a football squad being announced today. But we're going to stick with food for the moment, because I got to try my first ever Krispy Kreme this week when Just Eat popped into the office. So I mentioned this on the show the other day, that I'd never tried a Krispy Kreme, and sure enough, Krispy Kreme showed up with thanks to JustEat.ie, and Ger was like, we have to go upstairs and try one of these, because they're upstairs on the fifth floor here. So Dublin's favourite Krispy Kreme donuts are now available to order on the Just Eat app for delivery in Dublin. Have a look at this.
So it's come to our attention that this man, clearly a culty, has never tried a Krispy Kreme donut in his life. How the hell did that happen?
Just a sheltered existence, I guess. No carbs diet, very, very healthy lifestyle. But thankfully, we are here today to actually try a Krispy Kreme donut. Like, I've heard people have like been queuing up for hours. I've heard that they're unbelievable. Like, and I've heard, like, rioting to actually get a Krispy Kreme donut.
And lo and behold, we have some Krispy Kremes. What have we got? Sorry, what's your name?
Marin.
Marin, you're very welcome.
And we've the original glaze, and then we've chocolate sprinkle as well.
See, this is what I thought. This is what I thought a Krispy Kreme was. This thing, like with the glaze. And like straight away, you can taste the diabetes, and it tastes so good. It's absolutely amazing. I'm getting shivers. I'm coming up off my donut right now, and it is absolutely sensational. The question here today is whether or not it's worth queuing up for a drive-thru, whether or not it's worth queuing up for hours. That is the definition. How many hours will I queue up for one of these things? I'm giving it a solid 20 minutes at the moment. But I'm not going to lie, the second bite is better. The more you get into it, the more the buzz gets higher and higher and higher, and the more the sugar actually goes to your head. All of a sudden, this thing is just like disappearing in my hand. It's like dissolving. This here is not what a Krispy Kreme is. This here is something you get in Dunn's in a plastic bag, a Cuisine de France bag. But what we got here, this is key, right underneath this. I'm not sure you can get this, Joseph. This is the glaze right underneath it. So I think you actually have a bit of a double whammy here, where you get your glaze with the Krispy Kreme, and you get the chocolate, and you get the sprinkled toppings. And it's very, very good. Now, the texture of the glaze works perfectly with the texture of the sprinkles. The hundreds of thousands, still, it's kind of dissolving in your mouth. Very, very good. this I queue up for 40 minutes for in a drive-through. This for 20 minutes in the drive-through. Extremely sweet. I'm going to be hospitalised after this.
Best donuts ever.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah.
Yeah. Like, we do, like, literally a sponsored event here, so we have to say that it's best donuts ever. Let's go along with that. Is it, they're the best.
We know. We can't be bought.
Okay, sorry. These are the best ring donuts. The best ring donuts.
I don't like the stuffed ones.
The stuffed ones are far superior because you have more stuff in them. Yeah, but that's the whole point of that.
The stuff is superfluous.
Can you put custard into a Krispy Kreme donut?
You can do whatever you want with it.
So, if you can put custard into a Krispy Kreme donut, I'm setting down the gauntlet today for Krispy Kreme donuts. Put custard in it, and I would queue up for an hour.
Well, they do have custard ones, so we're going to have to go to Blanche now to get part two of this filmed. Well, congratulations.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You didn't lose it that much.
Yeah, I think I'm still on an absolute crash, to be quite honest with you, after that.
You were disgraced.
I seriously had, like, the biggest sugar come down of all time after that. I immediately regretted everything after eating those two donuts. The sugar high you get is amazing, and I felt brilliant.
Not a sugar high. The texture of the Krispy Kreme donut is just... It's beyond words. Words are futile tools. And you're a disgrace.
Stop.
On one level, you haven't had a Krispy Kreme.
You're describing it like it's a religious
donuts.
Experience.
Jam donuts. No. Too messy.
No, they're
very
not.
Very messy. Nice. And if Kenny Cunningham comes on the show with his Thunders propaganda again, Thunders is nothing compared to Krispy Kremes. And I'm not sponsored by Krispy Kremes. I just happen to think they're a particularly magnificent.
You're just
donut.
A very Americanized human being.
No, I'm not. No. Donuts over there are not the May West. Krispy Kreme, I was skeptical. I was like, how can people queue up for donuts? This is ridiculous. The best donut I've had...
It is still ridiculous, though.
Perhaps, but the best donut I've had is the little... There's a little booth there on O'Connell Street by the Bank of Ireland, a tiny little booth where she puts a bit of cinnamon and sugar on it for 80 cents or something.
I know the one.
It's very fresh, very greasy.
Right by Bank of Ireland,
yeah, very greasy. So if you want a little kind of carb treat as you're walking down through the thoroughfare of Dublin City, they're very, very nice. And I would strongly recommend it. But Krispy Kreme... Another level.
But it is a texture, you're right. I didn't really realise it.
It's a sponginess or something.
Like, you never quite know what you got until it's in your mouth,
until
sort of
it's
thing.
Gone.
And it's the Krispy Kreme, the texture is the key.
They're just basic cakes.
I would say that as well, and certainly not worth.
Stodgy, though. You know, you get these donuts that they're all kind of bread, carby, kind of. You can just feel them resting in your stomach. Krispy Kreme, it's just. You bite into it, and all of a sudden, there's just. This air bubbles or something that just gives you this really nice, and they're delicious. And I just reiterate, I've not been paid by Krispy Kreme, but if Krispy Kreme want to give me donuts for life.
Have you ever had an apple lattice?
No.
That, I think, that's the same science behind a Krispy Kreme as there is in an apple lattice, which makes it so good. It's the sort of the wafer layers of bread.
I don't know what an apple lattice is.
Well, like
a tracker model.
Oh, yeah, this is an apple lattice.
Oh yeah,
it's like a fancy, it's like a sausage roll, but with apple.
Not a big
exactly,
fan.
Exactly. That sort of sausage roll pastry, thin layer upon layer.
Pastry
sort of,
like the pastry in your apple lattice. It starts clinging to your mouth inside, and it's not a very pleasant experience. Doesn't
that happens with the Krispy Kreme?
It never happened.
It does happen.
It
never happened to me in that video, Johnny. And I will take that to my grave that it did cling to my mouth.
You better take that to your grave. And how wrong you were on that PSG. Handball last night.
I wouldn't go upstairs for a Krispy Kreme night. They're on the fifth floor, and I just wasn't bothered.
We took the lift.
Everyone is just
certainly took the lift down.
They're so overhyped.
You haven't had one.
No.
How can you overhype something you haven't even eaten? You were wrong.
Johnny, there's no way it's as good as
Shelburne
you described.
Shelburne overhyped.
Well, okay,
that is true. They are.
Let me put it to you this way. So I actually, I'm with Darren on this. That you can say it's overhyped because of, say, the queues. Like, for example, can you say that those Kanye West Yeezy shoes were overhyped because you didn't buy a pair?
No, because I didn't buy a pair.
Well, there was queues around the corner for that, and I said they were overhyped.
I don't even know what you're talking about, to be honest.
But like, just because you didn't try one doesn't mean you can't say they're overhyped.
You can't overhype food you haven't tried.
Of course you can. You're doing it right now. You're overhyping it for me. You've described it as a religious experience.
It is.
I know, but it is.
It is. Speaking of religious experience, by the way,
You've both lost it.
Was there a greater sign of the Republic of Ireland becoming utterly secular than literally... I was around Dublin for much of yesterday, blah, blah, blah. I think I saw one person with ashes on her forehead and I didn't know what it was.
Did you get ashes yesterday?
Not at all, no.
I saw loads. I genuinely saw loads on the way to the bus stop and walking around
town. Actually, no, secular Ireland is not here.
When was the last time you got ashes?
Me, personally?
Yeah.
Secondary school.
I just couldn't help but think I really wish I knew somebody called Angela yesterday. So, and that was all I could... Anyway, but I saw one person and I was like, why is she... Oh, yeah.
French fancies. Now, that's a decent thing.
I again.
Keep your donuts, French fancies, little Mr. Kipling, little tiny little, you know, fun size French fancies.
Ah, I'm intrigued.
Have you never had a French fancy?
No.
You've never had an apple lattice or a French fancy?
Tommy Rooney was in Roan, the producer, and he's found apparently the best pasta ever. Oh, yeah.
They're
lovely.
They're great.
But Tommy Rooney was in Roan and he
where's the best pasta ever?
He didn't do what the tourists did.
But Lucci's of Balls Bridge is the best pasta ever.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Casanoe Pepe, if anybody said Casanoe it to Rome.
So, the best Italian in Dublin is Terra Madre on Bachelor's Walk, and the proprietor is a massive Juve fan. He'll just keep running the kitchen watching Juve in his laptop.
Have you tried Pellucci's before you decide? Okay.
Yeah, it's grand. It's grand.
It's great.
But the Italian pasta is a notch ahead.
We've got
this just, is a sports
oh,
show.
The limo on the north strand is what Tommy says is the best Italian in Dublin. That's done. Do you have any sport to bring us?
I actually do.
On the north strand.
On north strand, yeah.
Oh, there you are.
Manchester United. Manchester United benefited from a dubious penalty as they advanced at the Champions League quarterfinals. Marcus Rashford's spot kick in the fourth minute of second half stoppage time secured an impressive 3-1 away victory for United that meant they progressed on away goals. Neymar took to Instagram to rage about that penalty call. The 27-year-old missed both legs through injury. He took to Instagram to complain, though. This is a disgrace. They put four people that know nothing about football in charge of looking at the replay for VAR. There is no penalty. How can it be a handball when it hits his back? Go F yourselves. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer refused to be drawn on whether or not it was a penalty, but he did heap praise on the man who scored it, Marcus Rashford. And then after that, a journalist asked a load of other journalists the questions and the press conference was quite strange.
Absolutely fantastic. Fearless. The kid is, he's got no doubt or no fear. And that's, when you're young, you don't have any fear. Of course, I wasn't sure we were going to score because my team, I've been in the Champions League before with Molde and we played Basel. We got a penalty in the last minute to go through and we missed it. So, of course, that went through my mind. But Rashi and Rom were on penalties today. It was up to them to fight to get it. And Rashi just slotted it. Brilliant.
Congratulations, Gunnar. I have to tell you that was a tremendous night. My question is to all the journalists in the room. Raise your hand if you think this man will get the job permanently now.
Jamie.
Okay. Neil told me, so you have to raise your arm. What's your comment to this, Ole Gunnar?
No, I'm the same as I've always been.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay.
Do the job as well as I can.
Have a nice night. Do you have any Brunost or chocolate to celebrate with? Or?
Not now, no.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, the less said about that, the better.
It's like when you watch them MMA press conferences and they're congratulating your man on his whiskey or just, it's great that you're here. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us. Lads with laptops and nothing better to do on it.
I've had a comment in, I struggle with the spelling of Isult, I think. Isult?
Yeah.
Isult Coley. I think she's a racing fan. I genuinely saw a woman with Ashley yesterday and was about to say to her she had something on her forehead as a good deed, like you would to somebody with the skirt tucked in, then copped.
I felt
a bit like that.
You've also had a comment in saying Darren Cleary has once been barred from a bakery. Is that true?
That actually is true.
Were you drunk?
No, I went to a bakery.
It's worse.
We walked by it. It was a bakery in Drumcondra. I won't say which one, but
what bakery was it?
I won't say which one, Johnny.
Like, good thing Kenny Cunningham never goes on about
bakeries. Are there in Drumcondra?
I'm not going to say which one because I want to be unbarred eventually. I was back in there last week, but I went in. I used to walk by with my girlfriend, and she always joked I'd love the Barbie cake. So it's a cake with Barbie, and then the lower part of the dress is a cake. So it's
Barbie of doll fame, yeah.
Yeah, Barbie baked into a cake. So for
I
the crack,
Barbies are
for like
you know, just being.
You know, everyone knows what a Barbie is on. You don't need to.
Hello.
You don't need to mansplain Barbie.
Yeah, I was actually asking for you to mansplain Barbie.
So basically, I bought it for the crack. I thought it'd be really funny. I went in and said, "Can I have a cake? The Barbie cake that says Happy Birthday, Laura." And they were like, "Yeah, 3 days. Come back. It's £30, whatever it was. Great." So
3 days.
Yeah, that's the time frame it took.
Bloody hell.
So I went back anyway to get my Barbie cake, and the lady comes back with a square cake that says Happy Birthday, Laura, and it's like a design of Barbie, but it's not Barbie baked into a cake. So I said, that's not the cake I ordered. I wanted the Barbie cake. And she said, this is the Barbie cake. I said, it's not the Barbie cake in the window. And she said, no, that's the doll cake. This is the Barbie cake here's your cake. It's personalised for
you.
Here's
your cake and eat it.
It's happy birthday, Laura. Happy 25th birthday, Laura. We're not selling it to anyone else. You have to buy it. I said, I'm not buying it. And she said, well, if you're not buying it, don't come back.
That's an absolute disgrace.
That is ultimately one of the most ridiculous stories. By the way, you are right on this. That was disgraceful. There should be a goodwill gesture.
100%.
You waited 3 days for a cake.
Well, apparently it was my mistake because I asked for a Barbie cake and the thing in the window was called the doll cake. I should have said, can I have the thing in the window?
I would have said, listen, hang on a sec. I've come back. I've come here in goodwill. I'm sorry, but there's a misunderstanding. But, like, no, I want that cake.
She wasn't giving me that cake, Johnny.
Are you still with Laura?
Yeah. I got her a unicorn really cake.
You can survive anything, you two.
Yeah.
I'll be up and downs.
Well, I had to explain to her I had no birthday cake for her, and she was like, why? It's like, oh, it's a long story. I'm barred from a bakery.
Jesus, that's a... Name and shame next time, Darren.
Maybe not, because I bought a cake off them last week.
I don't... I've never heard of anyone being barred from a bakery before.
I wasn't barred. She just said, if you're not going to pay for the cake, don't come back.
So that's barred.
Yeah, that is barred,
that's
isn't
barred,
it?
That's barred, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. I never tested the waters. Like, once or twice my mum went up there to get vanilla slices and I was walking with her and I just waited outside just in case.
Yeah, you were just sheepish.
Yeah, I wasn't too sure. I didn't want to chance it. Mm. You don't want to get thrown out of a bakery with your mum, it would be the ultimate embarrassment.
No, I think even Laura would probably dump you after that.
I think she might. Unai Emery is confident Arsenal have the depth to cope without Alexander Lacazette. He's suspended for the first leg of their Europa League last 16 tie against Rennes. Arsenal play away to the French club later. Lacazette will miss both legs as he serves the remainder of a three-match ban. The striker was sent off in the first leg of their last 32 clash with Bate Borisov for catching an opponent with his elbow. UEFA subsequently decided to suspend him for 3 matches. Now, Zinedine Zidane reportedly rejected Real Madrid's request to return to the club. That's according to their former president, Ramon Calderon. Santiago Solari is facing an uncertain future after Madrid's season hit a new low following their humiliating Champions League last 16 exit at the hands of Ajax earlier this week. The three-time reigning champions Madrid beaten 4-1 by Ajax at home as they bowed out 5-3 on aggregate. With Madrid 12 points off the pace in La Liga and already out of the Copa del Rey, the club are likely to wield the axe in the coming weeks. Now, Calderon claims the Madrid president, Florentino Pérez, contacted Zidane, who left the club in June after guiding them to 3 consecutive Champions League titles just a day after the humbling defeat to Ajax. He said on BBC 5 Live, I know that this morning, the president called Zidane to ask him back. He said, not now. He left open the possibility, though, of coming back in June. Uncapped strikers Padraig Amond and James Collins could be called up to the Republic of Ireland by Mick McCarthy when he reveals his squad this lunchtime. The Ireland boss will reveal the teams to play Gibraltar and Georgia for the Euro 2020 qualifiers. Amond scored in the FA Cup against Leicester and Man City this season, while Collins has netted 20 times for League One Luton. In rugby, the Ireland's forwards coach Simon Easterby has defended the decision to axe Sean Cronin from the squad. Joe Schmidt preparing for Sunday's Six Nations clash against France in Dublin, and the coaches claim the call was down to building squad depth. They have rejected suggestions that a poor performance in the win over Italy and Rome cost Cronin a place in the 37-man squad. He wasn't in Belfast for training last week. Schmidt has instead opted for Ulster's Rob Herring along with Rory Best and Niall Scannell. Easterby maintains that the call does not reflect on Cronin personally.
It's to do with building some depth, and we know a lot about Sean. You know, he's been in camp for a long time, he's been in the squad a long time, he's got a lot of caps, and it's an opportunity for us to see a bit more of other players. So, you know, that doesn't exclude him from next week, and it certainly doesn't exclude him from us going forward. It's about, in a specialist position like hooker, you know, if you lose a couple of players, then you know you're obviously can't supplement that with a player who's maybe playing in the back row, like players 6 or 7 or 8 and 6. You know, you need a specialist player, and we need to build and keep building that depth and knowledge of those players in that position.
Rory McIlroy begins the defence of his Arnold Palmer Invitational title later. Last year's winner plays alongside Mark Leishman and Patrick Reid. Graeme McDowell and Shane Lowry are also part of the field at Bayhill this week. While Andy Murray is no longer in pain but remains unsure whether he will be able to play top-level tennis again, the former world number one has had his second hip operation last month. He bids to overcome a problem that first became a serious issue in the summer of 2017. The Scot admits his chances of playing singles at Wimbledon this year are less than 50%. The rehab is going slow, he says, but going well. I want to continue playing. I said that in Australia. The issue is I don't know whether that's possible. And LeBron James has overtaken Michael Jordan on the NBA's all-time point scorer list. The 34-year-old moved to fourth on the list in the LA Lakers' defeat by the Denver Nuggets. James netted 31 points against the Nuggets to take his tally to 32,311 points, surpassing Jordan's tally. Only Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Karl Malone and Kobe Bryant have scored more points than James, who began his NBA career with the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2003. Last month, James became the first player to move on to the NBA's top 10 all-time scoring and assists lists.
Good stuff, Darren. So we're going to get to our Cheltenham picks in just a moment because Johnny's heading over there next week, of course, and I think it's the last time he'll be with us on OTB AM before that.
Aww.
But before that...
Maybe this can be celebrated by somebody giving me a Krispy Kreme.
Maybe it could be, but...
You have a problem. Like, if someone was speaking like that about alcohol, I'd stage an intervention. I think you've got a problem, Johnny.
What would be worse, being addicted to donuts or alcohol?
Neither are good.
Neither is good. That's true.
Donuts never killed anyone.
I'm not sure about that. Probably not true.
Yeah. Kenny Cunningham picked his Irish 11 on the show last night. Let's have a look at this. He picked his team from start to finish.
And then Uptree's an interesting one. People might think this is harsh. Shawnee McGuard, I think, strong argument for him straight down the middle. But these two lads are probably wild cards. Robinson and Ronan Curtis for me. As soon as I saw him play, first time I saw him play was for Derry at Daly Mount Park just a couple of weeks before he made his move to Portsmouth. And I watched him during that game and thought, this lad can play. He's got something physically imposing, could play off his left and right foot, turn a pace, played with a bit of personality. And he hasn't played much in an Ireland jersey, but a couple of times he's played, Joe, I've thought, this lad can really step up.
Sorry, how's James McLean not in your Irish no,
well, yeah, well, this is what I'm saying. A lot of people be saying, Ronan Curtis, what are you talking about? He's only played a couple of cameos. It's got to be James McLean. But I think this lad, Ronan Curtis, could be a surprise. But I have no problem with James McLean down that left-hand side. And I have absolutely no problem with Sean McGuire. But Robinson, for me, in an Ireland team in the last year, which has been really struggling, devoid of confidence,
no, he's been
not
good.
Creating... Yeah. He's really impressive and he's versatile. Robinson can operate off either flanks, could even play as a 10 if you want to play a different formation. I think potentially them two could very quickly establish themselves in the starting 11.
What do you make of that, Johnny?
I think McCarthy's going to struggle to get in with... I need to see the team again. We have... if we can get it up. McCarthy's probably a bit... I mean, he's just... the midfield is the area where... We've an awful lot of questions to answer. The back four, Doherty on the left, I'm not mad on that, to be honest, but even though a lot of people are putting it forward. I thought Seamus Coleman had a very good game against Liverpool on Sunday, and I imagine he might try to fit Doherty in on the right wing to give us really strong defensive. This is my team, actually. Brown, Brady, Hendrick. I'm not really sure about Brady, where he fits in. I just think he's brilliant at set pieces. So I think set pieces are going to be critical for this team to edge out, to, you know, eke out a goal here or there. I really like O'Dowda. I think cutting in from the right suits him as well.
He's been brilliant this season as well.
Yeah, he has been brilliant this season. And McLean, not a big fan of McLean.
When did you make this team?
This was last week. There was a bit of a misunderstanding with Nathan Murphy, which wouldn't have been the first time that would have happened, where I thought it was the team he will pick versus the team he should pick.
So this is the team he will pick, you think?
It was as close as I can go, because I don't think... I'm not sure I'd play McLean, to be honest. I'd probably play... might even play O'Dowd on the left and play Doherty on the right. I'm not really sure now, but the midfield situation is the tricky one, because we really needed Rice. But by the way, like, how hateable is Rice becoming all of a sudden? Just everything he does now, just like his goal celebration against Newcastle, I was disgusted looking at it, because everything about Rice was grand until he decided that he wasn't playing for us anymore.
Yeah, it's a proper ex situation, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't mind all the procrastinating, I didn't mind all the crap on social media, and then he comes up with this rubbish that it was the toughest decision of his career when he's been playing for the last, 3 months? You know, he's 19 years of age. And I was always wary of him as the minute he said he liked our national anthem, I was very wary of him, because it's a singularly terrible national anthem, and he said it was like catchy, a great tune, but now I just don't like him at all. Anyway, he's not going to be in our midfield. I'm not sure who will be.
Yeah, you'd like to see a little bit more from Jeff Hendrick. I think the problem is Jeff Hendrick's never reached the heights he did in 2016. That would be an issue. O'Dowd, I don't think, has had a bad game for Ireland. Mm-hmm. He's been one of the only positives over the last few years, where particularly last 12 months there hasn't been a lot to be excited for. you have to accommodate Brady, but we've never actually found Robbie Brady's best position for Ireland. And that's a serious concern. I think McCarthy's the kind of guy where he knows that it's about getting results. I don't think he'll be as tentative as Martin O'Neill in the way he sets up teams. I don't think that ridiculous thing of not trusting the players enough to tell them what you want from them and what role they'll play in your team will continue. I think the players who play under Mick will have a very good understanding of what, one, Mick wants from them, and two, what he expects from them.
And also the fact that he will inculcate in them a little bit of self-belief in that, because like the technical players throughout the O'Neill era, it's kind of like trying to run in a swimming pool, basically. You can't. They just couldn't play their game, and they're capable of a lot better, particularly the likes of O'Dowd and Hendrick. And you will see performances from these players that was totally at odds with what they were doing for the last few years, because there was no football played, and it must have been dispiriting. Like, it's obviously, you see the revolution at Man United just because it was a change of coach. And I don't think we have a bad team, and I think Obafemi's injury is a bit disappointing, because I think he's a lot to offer, but Sean Maguire's hitting a bit of form, and I think Brown and Maguire's relationship from Preston, I think Brown should play. Where, again, I'm not sure, but I agree with Darren. I think Mick will get the best out of our back four big time as well. I think Duffy's going to be hugely important. But set pieces, we were shockingly bad under O'Neill for set pieces.
That squad's going to be announced this afternoon. Roger Gammon, as you mentioned there, getting included.
Carlo Rising.
Great news for him, yeah, absolutely. 31 years of age. One other football story I wanted to touch on from an Irish perspective is Andy Reid being appointed as manager of the under-18s team. Good to have him involved in the FAI setup, is what I say. Is the FAI kind of making a bit more of a move to actually identify some of these people and getting them on board?
I think it's smart. I think it makes sense to try and pad out your underage teams with former internationals. The FAI as well, in recent months, have dismantled their scouting network in a move that was really badly pillared. I think Liam Brady was disappointed with the lads who have been let go. The likes of Don Givens is no longer involved with this association. So at a time where they seem to be doing less scouting than they were doing, the fact that they're trying to bring in and include former pros in forming the next generation of footballers is really, really important. It's a shame that it can't be done hand in hand with a decent scouting network in England and other parts of the UK. But it is positive to have someone like Andy Reid, who was a great technical footballer in his day, and also kind of played at the last vestiges of modern football, so you would have a better understanding of, I think, the modern player than maybe the likes of Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane would, who are very much removed from what they were in their time as players.
Yeah, we're going to move on to Cheltenham to finish up this morning, Johnny. You're heading over next week. We're all going to be on the bandwagon. We're all going to be horse racing experts, thanks to somebody like yourself.
It's great that we have 4 days of where everybody just gets sucked up by the whole thing. It's Cheltenham is nothing like it.
We're going to do five horses to watch. From your perspective, I know you've done a lot of
preview
nights. Five horses.
Watch.
To watch, yeah.
No, to bet on.
To bet on.
If you want to have a bet, you're not going to watch them. We're going to have a little wager on these five horses.
Do you not like
absolutely not.
Fahine a couple of years ago, it was just kind of like a sit back and enjoy the beauty of the horse sort of thing, no?
Life makes you cynical. I'm more or less removed from the emotional attachment to it.
Cold, never would have been able to tell.
Cold, cold, money, money, money.
So do people not enjoy horse racing? Is it all...
I know, they do, yeah. Like, you don't have to bet to enjoy it. But if the betting were taken out of it, I'd give up on horse racing straight
would
away.
You?
Absolutely no interest.
Who are we looking at?
Sir Eric in the Triumph Hurdle, the greatest good thing of Cheltenham history, perhaps.
That's a big statement.
Strong, strong fancy.
That's a big statement.
One of my biggest fancies ever at Cheltenham, no doubt. And he's slightly odds against. Joseph O'Brien, we had on the show here, Friday Night Racing, last Friday, couldn't but hide his admiration for Ger and I. No, for the horse, actually. But Sir Eric. Ballyward in the National Hunt Chase. Patrick Mullins will ride this.
Ballyward.
Band of Outlaws, Fred Winter. City Island in the Ballymore Novice Hurdle. Ballymore is Sean Mulryan. Sean Mulryan actually owns City Island. And Ask for Glory, my only English train selection, in the Champion Bumper. The well-named Ask for Glory.
What I usually do is I put down a few bets in day one at Cheltenham, and if I don't have a profit, I just stop immediately. What do you advise on day one? Like, what's your strongest fancy on day one?
I'm not saying you should never chase, but you shouldn't just pull up either, because, like, gamblers have a very strange mentality in that, like, how are you getting on today, or how are you getting on for the year, when it's like, what does it matter? Like, it's a bet, every bet's individual. Like, how you're getting on today is completely irrelevant. You know, that's just because it's a 24-hour time frame. It's like as if sleep means that, you know, life starts all over again. It doesn't. Like, you're either up money over the course of your life or you're not. And what was the question again?
I to be honest with you, I don't even remember. I kind of like the way our life is broken up into days, to be honest with you. Basically, I don't have a good day one. I'm done and I'm out and all that.
That's ridiculous.
It doesn't matter.
It's anyway, almost as ridiculous as
you
Sam not
Crow of the year. Someone told me Sam Crow last year and they were like, put your
Sir
socks
Eric.
And jocks on.
Sir Eric.
Sir Eric is the
triumph
socks and jocks.
The surest thing
put
he's ever had.
Put socks and jocks on it. Put everything on it.
They're worth next to nothing.
No, absolutely.
Yeah,
don't.
But like that's the saying.
Absolutely, yeah. Don't put jocks and socks on anything like that. That's
or anything really.
Not
literally. It's a figure of speech.
Like, I would actually prefer the advice to be literally rather than figuratively. Definitely don't put socks and jocks on Sir Eric. But thank you for the tip all the same, Johnny. Thank you very much for joining us this morning as well. It's been a pleasure in your company. Enjoy Cheltenham.
No problem. Yeah, I'll be in touch. None of this watching stuff, though. You know, have a little bet. Why not?
Okay.
No. Life is a bet.
Okay, fair enough. Darren, thank you very much for coming in this morning. That's all from us this morning on OTB AM. The Hurling Show is next up here on Off the Ball social channels. That's live from 3 o'clock. And then on 7 o'clock from the radio this evening, you've got John Giles, Mick McCarthy's first Irish squad, the latest on Irish rugby and much, much more besides. We're back tomorrow morning from 7:45 a.m. with a special show because it's International Women's Day, so we've got Irish international Louise Quinn, Maura Trasny Callig, rugby at Ronan O'Gara and Alan Quinlan, and a special airing of the Dadcast including Andy Lee and Kieran Donaghy, and much, much more besides. See you there. We'll chat to you tomorrow morning. Bye bye for now.
So if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 a.m.